gubernatorial candidate and 47th Ward Chicago alderman, Amaya Paywar, the independent hip-hop collective Doomtree, and the swap meet with Greg Flam. Now, here's your host, a man who is thinking about going flat-brim, Justin Kaufman.
Right? I mean, I think I see a lot of the rappers and the other guys with the cool, crisp, flat-brim. That could be me. I mean, I've always been a curved brim kind of guy. Maybe I go flat brim. You know, bring it to the 21st century. No? All right, fine. Okay. I get so angry about it, Chicago. Everyone gets so angry. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got a great show lined up here on this Wednesday. It's Muggy Wednesday. Coming up a little bit later this hour, Mike Fouché is going to join us, as he does every Wednesday, to talk politics, city, county, state. Of course, the state politics is where we're going to be tonight, talking school funding. The lawmakers are being called back on Sunday next week to try and override the governor's veto on SB1. We'll see what happens. This is going to be an interesting take, because the Senate could possibly do that, and it's likely they would do that, but it's the House that would probably run into trouble as they try to get 71 votes to override. And what does it mean, since tomorrow is the deadline for school funding to be approved and distributed to all the districts in the state of Illinois, and it won't be ready? So what does it mean? We'll talk Mike Fouché a little bit later this hour. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we continue talking Illinois state politics, and we'll talk about the upcoming 2018 election and the race for governor. Our guest tonight, as we start a series where we talk to the gubernatorial candidates at the big table. Tonight we start with the 47th Ward Alderman, Amaya Paywar. He, of course, is running for the Democratic ticket. He's a progressive Democrat on the north side of Chicago, and he has no money, and he is using a good old-fashioned campaign technique by going county to county, almost door to door, if he can get it done for the time, to get his message of inequality, economy, schools, and other issues, and we'll talk with Alderman Paywar about his campaign coming up at the big table, 8 o'clock. Tonight, a little bit later, we are going to talk hip-hop. The hip-hop collective, the independent collective, Doomtree, Dessa, and Paper Tiger in studio tonight. I'm psyched about this. If you're a fan of hip-hop, you know Doomtree. They have been an independent collective in Minneapolis, St. Paul. They really have put they're one of the best, if not the best, collectives doing their own work. They're not signed. They have their own record label, Doomtree, and they have throughout the years been their own force coming out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. So we'll talk with them about their career and what it takes to be independent in a world where independence is becoming more of a genre than an ethos. So we'll talk to them coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And Greg Flam is here tonight. Time to play the swap meet. This, of course, where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. If you got a garage sale coming up, this is a promo we had today. If you got a garage sale and you're like, I think I'll put this in the $4 and under bin. Wait! Ask Greg first, right? You don't just go willy-nilly and be like, I guess these baseball cards are worth nothing. 25 cents and under. No! Because then guys like Greg come in going, I'll take the 25 cents. They sell it for $12 and they're like, yes! I want to make like a prize should be like someone who does the best, who makes the most money off of, you know, what Greg says. Oh, that's great. You get $2,000 for that. The prize should be that they get to come to my desk here at WGN and pick anything they want off the desk. Like almost like, you know, it's swap meet, but it's my desk, which would be napkins, leftover pretzels, and books from authors. So it might be worth there's value there. Unsigned. There's also some pens and some loose leaf paper.
You can get a pretty decent haul.
Maybe we get rid of books. Take those off. You can't take the books. You just get pretzels. I think there's a T-shirt. There's a random T-shirt in there.
Yeah, I think there is. Yeah.
And a red chair. So there's those three.
It has some sort of stain on it. I think it's for my old fruit. I set my old fruit on there, and then I don't eat it for a couple of days.
It's a mystery stain. Yeah. Hey, take as is. We should do that video.
We can reupholster it.
We should have him come through and evaluate the junk in our office. A lot of good stuff in there. So tonight, 10 o'clock, Greg Flam, Swap Meet here, 312-981-7200. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time for the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here today's top stories. Well, the FBI did the old pre-dawn raid on former President Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, his house today. Standard hashtag fake FBI raid. That old saw. Nothing to see here, folks. Manafort is definitely a person of interest, seeing that he ran the campaign in the summer in question. He has deep Russian connections, and he was in the meeting with the Russian lawyer talking about adoption with Donald Trump Jr. Not sure what the FBI was looking for. They didn't tell me. But if I were going to venture a guess, I'd say they were looking to see if Manafort had any personal pictures with Putin, fishing, bare-chested, right? Because that would be the aha moment we've been looking for as a country. Does this in, breaking news, take a look at Paul Manafort with no shirt on next to Vladimir Putin. At this point, that's the only way. It's going to have to be Trump and Putin shirtless, right? That's going to be the evidence we're looking for. The New York Times is reporting today that the now infamous line of fire and fury was improvised by the president yesterday. The sheet in front of him was all about the opioid crisis. That's the talking points, which is what he's supposed to be talking about. He went off script when the threat of North Korea came up. Of course, North Korea responded to the threat by escalating, saying they would bomb Guam. Bomb Guam. It's bomb Guam. So good to know that the president's just going rogue when talking about rogue states, right? The last thing the world needs right now is a off top of head when talking nuclear war, right? I don't know. Write it down? Maybe? Put your words together? A couple thoughts? Maybe? Your brain is saying to say something? Tell it to take a day off? I don't know. The lawmakers in Springfield are heading back this Sunday to work on some school funding measures, maybe write some essays about what they did on their summer vacation. You know, the normal stuff. The Senate will try to override the veto. Then the House has 15 days to try their hand at an override. This means that the lawmakers will be in session during the Illinois State Fair and Governor's Day, a day that Republicans usually have a barbecue and mingle with voters. So no state fair for you, Republicans. You have to get your decorative Jack Daniels or Pink Floyd mirrors somewhere else. Get your airbrushed T-shirt on your own time. The city wants more info on a stabbing at a Dropkick Murphy's Rancid show at Northerly Island last night. First off, you mosh at a Rancid show, right? You flail your fist around like an angry fish that's grasping for air on a pier. That's the acceptable level of violence at a Rancid show. But bringing in a knife, stabbing someone, over the line. Do what Dropkick Murphy's do. Dropkick. That's acceptable. No knives. It's ridiculous. Naperville's warning its citizens of rabid bats. Yep, that's when bats have rabies. I mean, is there a worse kind of rabid animal? I mean, I guess dogs or bears, but rabid bats? I mean, ugh, that's just evil. Sleep upside down, they foam at the mouth, they attack your hair. Ugh, terrible. I'm sure it'll be okay, Naperville. Nothing to see. You're okay. The animal control there is saying, if you see a bat in your yard, don't touch it. Deal. It's a deal. Don't touch it. Some Wisconsin news. The state Senate leader is worried that they may not have the votes to approve a whopping tax incentive bill to lure Foxconn to the state. Yep. Last week seemed like a done deal, but the state assembly has to vote on the package, and many on both sides of the aisle are worried about how much Governor Walker promised to the manufacturer to locate in the state. Uh-oh. A report out says that Wisconsin taxpayers won't see a benefit from the new plant until 2043. This, of course, was a huge announcement last week for the state and President Trump, even prompting the Tribune editorial board to write about why Illinois couldn't get this kind of deal. We want to get ripped off till 2043. But like everything else in politics, it'll work itself out. I wouldn't worry about it. In weather, it's hot and muggy today, and it's going to be a tough hurricane season, so double whammy. In sports, the Cubs got Bumgarner today. towering lefty for the Giants stymied the Cubs through seven. The Cubs did what it's been known to do for the last couple games, just lose it late. The bad news for the Cubs, though, late in this game, Wilson Contreras was trying to beat out a ground ball, and he pulled up limping with what looked like a hamstring issue. He's getting an MRI, and a DL stint is probably likely. Ugh, just when he was turning it on, too. Hey, time for Alex Avila to step up, right? Grow that beard out. Jake Arrieta's doppelganger, you're up next. Kyle Hendricks didn't really have it today, going less than five, but only gave up one run. But, man, was Hendricks this slow of a pitcher last year? I mean, his fastball is 85 miles per hour, and his changeup is like 75. I mean, I get it. It throws off a major league hitter's timing. But, jeez, that's got to catch up to him, right? Something tells me Hendricks may not be back all the way from his injury that he had early in the year. The Cubs get a day off tomorrow. They head to Arizona for the weekend. Just seems to be ramping up for the Cubs, who've now lost three straight series. But that being said, they're still 18-8 since the break. But it's tightening up in the NL Central. The Brewers, Cardinals, and Pirates are now within three games of the Cubs. Going to make for an interesting stretch run. The White Sox host the Astros again tonight. Last night, they beat the best team in baseball down at the Cell. A what? Center fielder Adam Engel made a huge home run robbing catch, which ESPN loves. So we got that going for us. Real nice. Tonight, they hope to continue the trend, you know, winning more than one game in a row. I think they've only won like four games since the All-Star break. Best news ever, Reynaldo Lopez is penciled in to start Friday night against the Royals. Lopez will be the second big prospect up after Yoan Moncada. Certainly not the last. The Bears getting ready for their preseason opener tomorrow against the Broncos at Soldier Field. It's going to be rocking for about a series and a half. That'll be a lot of, wow, is that a new bathroom? These bathrooms real nice. The rest of us will just be watching Netflix. Not much to watch for this early in the season, except for the fact that Mitchell Trubisky is going to play. But please, don't Cade McNown, Rex Grossman this, right? I mean, I don't like when a young quarterback plays in preseason because they're like, oh, looks like he rolled up on the ankle. Then we got to wait like another year. It's, no, don't do that. I'd keep Kyle Long in at all times. Make him play all four quarters. Also, Sun-Times told me today that special teams player Sherrick McManus was a Pro Bowl alternate for the team last year. Really? Well, you learn something new every day. Right now, it doesn't look like he's going to make the squad. Pro Bowl alternate, Sherrick McManus. Although, I'd take him over Josh Bellamy. I mean, he also plays great special teams, but he dropped that game-winning TD against the Titans last year. Well, let's not dwell on the past. Let's focus on the future. 13-3. And it was announced today there's going to be a protest outside Soldier Field over the NFL's alleged blacklisting of Colin Kaepernick. Which I support, but the fans in Chicago, we didn't do anything. Don't make the experience of trying to get into Soldier Field harder, right? It's already a pain in the ass. Can we check your bag and also watch out for the protesters? No. I can understand if like the Bears passed on Colin Kaepernick for some reason, but they didn't, so be cool. Do it over by the Field Museum. All right. And finally tonight, Governor Rauner signed into law Barack Obama Day, which will be a state holiday on August 4th every year in the state of Illinois. Before you get riled up, it's just an honorary holiday. No one gets a day off. They made sure of that. But to be fair, I mean, doesn't P. Diddy have an honorary day? He does, right? So just let it go. We could celebrate on the 4th by making stirring speeches of unity and hope, and then after we drop the mic, just change the rules till we get our way. That's tradition, the Obama way. That's the carryout for August 9, 2017. Since it's just about state fair time, we're running a special on pork chops on a stick. For every two pork chops on a stick that you order, we give you one cholesterol pill. Yeah, you're welcome. All right, coming up, Mike Fouché is going to be here. We're going to talk school funding. What happened today? Some errors in the math. Always good when you're talking about school funding and there's errors in the math. So download 720 WGN. Stay with us. Quick correction. I said in the carryout that the Manafort raid was today. I knew that the information came out today that was a couple weeks back. And someone said fake news on my mistake. And I'm like, yeah, well, the carryout's the original. It's OG fake news.
It's all right. It happens.
How you doing, buddy?
You know, I can totally relate to Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras, who pulled up lame today in the eighth inning trying to leg out a grounder to first. I did that in softball.
You did?
I hit this dribbler in softball. Embarrassing. I couldn't even get the darn thing out of the infield. And here I am, just, I'm flying down the first base line, and then all of a sudden you hear that little and I knew
Yeah,
I knew it.
That's just, you know what that is? At softball, you need to unlearn all the things you learned about sports.
Yeah.
Because if you hit a little grounder, you know, this might as well be an out. They just jog it, right? And it's so hard because your brain's like, I have to hustle to first base, but I don't hustle at all when I play
softball.
But see,
I was embarrassed because it was such a pathetic hit. And then the shortstop actually bobbled the damn thing. So I figured, well, you know, maybe I can salvage some self-respect here by getting to first base. But it wasn't meant to be.
I can top that. I mean, I pulled a myriad muscles swinging the bat. Just swinging it. I'm like, oh,
I got it. I got it. I don't have it in my lower back. Sweetie. Help me.
I was on the injury report every week. Right? I was a two-inning kind of guy. Come in for two, and I'm like, somebody else has to come in at this point. Somebody run for me. I'm the run-for-me guy. You get to a certain point with that, you know. Can I get a runner?
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
There it is. Get some uplifting music.
That's some sweet stuff.
To get us ready for the Illinois State Fair.
Is that Sammy Hagar or something?
It's so you can see. I don't know if he's playing at the Illinois State Fair, but someone like Hagar usually plays.
Foghat is playing.
Are they really?
Yeah.
I'd see that. And when you throw the darts at the balloons, and if you get a couple, you get a decorative mirror.
Yeah, I love the decorative mirror.
Those are great. They still have those.
Yeah.
Mike Fouché is here to talk, to preview the Illinois State Fair, which is coming up, but also to talk school funding. He joins us every Wednesday.
Wait, I'm previewing the State Fair.
You're previewing the State Fair. We're talking about all the amenities, all the great things you can get.
Butter cow.
Yeah, the butter cow. Mike, good to see you, buddy.
It's great to be here.
Of course, with the Daily Line, joins us every Wednesday to talk politics. Let's talk about school funding. Thursday is the deadline that we once again are going to blow through. That districts were supposed to get the number, the money, the whatever the cost, whatever it was going to be that was going to be allocated to their district in the state by Thursday.
Right.
They're not getting it this time. It's not ready to go. Nope. It won't be ready even if they override a veto next week.
Right.
I mean,
need at least a full week. But by the time the legislation is passed, all the different organizations in the state government have told us you need at least a full week.
Now, you've told us and you've explained that most schools can borrow and maneuver and move around. So it's not we're not in a situation where schools are in danger of not opening.
And officially, no school has told the State Board of Education that they're going to be shutting down. So this is official now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But here's where the rub is. If this moves on and moves forward, there will be a certain point where they'll run out of money.
Yeah, and some have
less money
probably,
than others.
Probably in a month. Like, if nothing is done, you know, by mid-September, schools will begin to, like, start saying, oh, yeah, we're going to close October 1st or something like that. But that's very real. Exactly where, you know, what's up with getting the money? I mean, you know, it's really all about when the legislature is going to pass something. And it looks like what's going to happen on Saturday is that the Senate is going to meet and they're going to just crush the amendatory veto. So you have two choices.
Okay.
You can have a vote to override. In order to do that, you have to have a majority, or you vote to try to support it. And in that case, you also have to have a supermajority. You have to have a 3/5 vote.
So you're either voting against it or for it.
Right.
And what route does it look like the Senate's going to take?
It looks like they'll take some kind of vote. But the thing is that if it's not supported, if the vote to support it doesn't pass, then it's a full veto and the whole thing crashes.
There's no way they're going to, I mean, it's a Democratic Senate. They're not going to vote to support the amendatory veto.
Right. They actually have a supermajority in the Senate of Democrats. And so they'll probably just vote to destroy it and turn it into a full veto.
And then the full veto moves to the House, right?
Well, no, that if one House does that, then it's all over. So, you know, once one House says, that's it. It's all over. So probably what's going to happen is that the Senate is going to meet sometime around noon on Sunday, and then they're going to vote to crush it, and then that'll be it, and we'll have to start all over again. And what's looking like is that Monday and Tuesday, there's not going to be any meetings or session. Speaker Mike Madigan just announced that on Wednesday, he's calling everybody into the House to meet, which incidentally
is Governor's Day,
where all the Republicans are supposed to be busy walking
classy
around
move,
State Fair.
Right, right.
They have a barbecue that's kind of cool. And, you know, so, I mean, basically Madigan has said, sorry, you know, forget your Governor's Day. You're going to be hanging out in the Capitol.
If we can't have our Democrats' Day, it's your Governor's
Day. Right.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this. Of course, there was the amendatory veto from Governor Rauner. In that veto, we're finding out more and more as you sort of look down the what actually was put in place for this amendatory veto, what the plan is for the governor. And one of the things that really kind of confused me, and it seems to confuse journalists and everyone, is that the numbers were wrong. There was some sort of play where the numbers that were given to, was it the State Board of Ed, were wrong, and the way that they were crunched was wrong when it came to TIFs. Where are we at with that? What is happening?
So
there's wrong math going on.
There's an official scoring that needs to be done by the State Board of Education in order to figure out exactly how much money every single district would get as a result of this legislation. And so everyone is waiting for the official Board of Education scoring so that we can say whether or not districts are getting more or less money.
Which is what the governor has been saying
right,
on his media.
According
tour,
to
right,
the governor.
Right.
The governor released, he had a website where he said, well, these are my calculations, but none of that is official. None of it really counts. It has to be by the Board of Education. And what the Board of Education has said is, well, actually, some of the stuff that we got is incorrect, and there is a lot of changes. They haven't said exactly what is incorrect, but the phrasing seems like there is something that was hinky or done incorrectly with the governor's stuff. So the Board of Education is now having to redo stuff and try and figure out. It's not clear exactly what it is, and they won't talk about it, but we know is that they're delaying, and the only reason that there could be a delay is that there was something wrong with the materials that the governor gave.
Mike, I'm not going to ask you to editorialize or to throw your opinion out, but there are two sides to this that say that SB1 was a good bill, that it had a good idea for funding schools across it was equitable. We've heard from different groups have come out. The governor has gone 180 on that, where he has gone on the media tour saying this was Speaker Madigan's way, once again, where he is destroying the state of Illinois. He's trying to give freebies and bailouts to the city of Chicago. Where are we in the truth when it comes to a school funding formula bill that is working its way through Springfield?
So let me tell you who it is that I've talked to and what it is that they said. Of course, all of the teachers' unions throughout the state, not just CTU, but, you know, the IFT and the IEA, are all in favor of SB1. They think that the SB1 system is better. But also, the Illinois Association of School Board School Business Officials, who are basically the people who have to deal with the budgets, they have come out and said that they felt that the SB1 method was better. The Illinois Association of School Boards came out to say, well, we're not necessarily in favor of SB1, but we like the system that it has. Other education, pro-education organizations throughout the state, nobody has come out to say we're against SB1. The worst that they've said is we would like to see something passed that uses the funding formula and the systems that SB1 has.
And really finds a way to divorce itself from the pension pickups and the things that the governor had a problem with.
Right. I mean, the issue that a lot of Republicans have is that they don't like the pension pickup that the city gets out of SB1. They don't like the size of the extra money that Chicago schools get out of SB1. Those are the really big things. But what's interesting is that Rauner's amendatory veto, which was very extensive, went into a whole series of additional things. So not just those two things, but it also changed the way that the funding formula works. It's very complicated, this issue about how you calculate the property wealth of a district and as you try and figure out the how much money they should get from the state and whether or not a TIF is included in calculating that property wealth. Well, Chicago has a lot of TIFs, and Republicans downstate in the suburbs feel that Chicago, and this is a term that they used in a hearing today that I went to, they kept saying Chicago is hiding its wealth behind TIFs because the TIF isn't calculated. And their argument is, okay, well, Chicago is getting extra money. But the thing is that there was testimony today, there's a lot of places that are not Chicago that use TIFs. And so there's a lot of collateral damage in the changes that Ronner made to this.
These changes are to take on Chicago. There are other communities that are not Chicago that could be affected by
And you know, it can be for them, it's $100,000, which is a lot of money. That might be a teacher or two.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio. We're talking about school funding and the issues that are happening right now in Springfield and will happen next week. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. There we go. Mike Fouché in studio. We're talking school funding and the debate that continues. One of the things that was in the mandatory veto, which is interesting, is a change to how pension pickups get sort of how it all gets played out with teachers.
What it does is that it changes it so that new teachers don't get the same pension pickup throughout the entire state, which is like huge.
What is the teachers union? That's just not going to fly.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter in Chicago, but the other teachers unions are pretty upset about it. And the school districts are very upset about it, and because this is not something they were warned about, and it came completely out of left field.
Now, these are things that are in the amendatory veto. Let's say that what happens on Sunday is they crush the amendatory veto. Do Republicans, Brady in the Senate, Durkin in the House, do they have the kind of clout from this political fight to add some of the things that were brought up by Rauner in the amendatory veto to a new bill that'll be circulated, or will Democrats do what they've done before, which is just reintroduce it and try again?
I doubt that they're just going to reintroduce it. I mean, what really the talk that we're hearing from the negotiators in both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, is that there's going to be a new bill, and people are talking very seriously about what the things are that are going to be considered. I think we're going to see less money for CPS. I think we're going to see, you know, whether it's the pension pickup or the block grant, I think we're going to see maybe some changes to the TIF stuff, but probably, I don't know, that doesn't seem necessarily realistic. One thing that's actually gotten a lot of attention that's very hot is this idea of tax scholarships, you know, which is essentially vouchers for private schools and parochial schools.
Do you think that that's something that the Democrats in Springfield would go for?
Ah, man. I mean, you know,
that's a hard one.
I think really the question is, you know, the Republicans really, they have some currency here, which is that you need to get 71 votes in the House, and the Democrats don't have that. And so they're going to get some stuff. You know, it's really what's really, really interesting is how well Bruce Rauner decides to negotiate. You know,
and that's and Mike, I mean, we've been talking on the show weekly. One of the things that rarely happens in this political climate in the state of Illinois is any sort of compromise or negotiation. It's my way or the highway. If you have an amendatory veto that has all these things in there that Democrats are like, no way, and you know, Republicans around are saying no way to a pension pickup. I mean, I just based on the last 3 years, how do you see these guys coming together to get something done?
You know, talking to the rank and file members in the House and the Senate, I think that they are very anxious to do a deal. And there's some really fun stuff. I mean, like, Representative Bob Pritchard, who's a Republican from the Northwest suburbs, from the Western suburbs, he announced that he's retiring. This guy has just got a, you know, no F's kind of attitude. And he is just going, I mean, it's awesome. It's like Bullworth. It's incredible. I mean, he is just really tearing everybody a new one. It's really great. And he's really, really, really realistic about what it is going to happen or not happen. And I think that there's a lot of people like that. They're just like, you know what? We're going to get this done, and we're going to get it done right. So I think that something's going to happen outside of the leaders.
I got to say, as we wrap up here, I'm flabbergasted. And I think it's interesting that for years in this town, we have had a progressive agenda talking about TIFs, talking about how we've heard from Ben Jarofsky at the Reader to you know, others who have talked about that Chicago's not broke. They're doing it on purpose. It's been really sort of coming from the left.
Right.
It's interesting to see that rhetoric and that argument is being adopted almost as a foundation for the Republicans in Springfield. I'm fascinated by it.
I think that fiscal conservative Republicans really despise Chicago's TIF system because they know that it basically, I mean, there is truth to what they're saying, is that it hides wealth from the state. And the problem though is that the argument the Republicans are saying is that it's hiding wealth from the state. But the problem is that all, and this, you keep hearing this from all the superintendents who testified today, is that there's not enough money going to schools in the first place. You know, right. it's 29% of the total funding is coming.
And they're saying we don't want to give that money. Go get it from your TIFs.
Right. And which is kind of ridiculous. Superintendents are saying, hey, look, you know, we, even if that happened, there still wouldn't be equity in funding. Really, we need to have, you know, almost twice as much money coming from the state anyway.
Yeah. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line joins us every Wednesday here. You can also check out the podcast Aldercast, which is right here on WGN Plus, comes out Fridays.
Yep.
Mike, great to see you.
Great to be here.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this month marks the official kickoff to the 2018 Illinois gubernatorial campaign. Obviously, anybody paying attention knows that it may be official in title only, since the campaigns for governor have already ramped up. The Illinois State Fair is usually where you can have the traditional start to the election season. But the Illinois Democratic Party has canceled Democrats Day, citing redundancy, since they have a breakfast for party leaders at a nearby Springfield hotel. My next guest announced this week that he'd like to bring a new political day to the fair called Progressive Day to introduce different ideas and candidates to Illinois Democrat voters. Amaya Pawar is the 47th Ward Alderman in the city of Chicago, and he's running for governor on the Democratic ticket. The Progressive is up against millionaires and veteran Springfield politicians, so his path to the governor's mansion is an uphill battle. But Pawar isn't worried about hills, as he's taken his message to downstate Illinois and to other non-Chicago areas to press the flesh. In our series interviewing gubernatorial candidates, we start with Northside Alderman Amaya Pawar. Alderman Pawar, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So first, I asked a question. I mean, I guess it's a simple question. Well, why do you want to be governor of the state of Illinois?
I've been watching politicians like our president for the last 2 years, and then Governor Rauner over the last 2 years, pit urban communities against rural communities, pit race and class against one another. And all this has done is perpetuated this rhetoric that we're all so different from one another. And Governor Rauner has been really great at going down to poor white communities mm-hmm. and telling them the reason why their schools aren't funded or why they have trouble getting ahead is because those people in Chicago get more than their fair share. And we know what those means. It takes a different meaning every day, just like it does with the president. One day it's African Americans, the next day it's immigrants, the next day it's refugees. But this tactic that Governor Rauner uses is called divide and rule. And he does it, and he pits us all against one another, all so that nothing at the top ever changes. See, if poor white people, poor black people, and poor brown people are fighting one another without recognizing that the inequities are the same, that those inequities transcend race and class, if everyone joined together, you'd have a fairer system.
This is not new, of course, pitting the state of Illinois versus the city of Chicago in politics and everything, in regionalism, if you will. I mean, this is something that goes beyond Governor Rauner. This is something that has been going on for decades in this state.
But it's been going on decades in this state, in this country, by wealthy people who tell us that we're all so different from one another. That, to me, is the truth that we have to uncover. And that's what I'm doing on this race, in this race, is going around the state, barnstorming from county to county, and talking to people who voted for Trump. And what I hear over and over again is, you know, people saying, look, my dad worked in a warehouse and made 25 bucks an hour and put our family, helped put someone through college. We had a middle class lifestyle. And what they say is, like, now that that warehouse job is gone because of NAFTA or because of automation or because that manufacturing job's gone because of that, that their only options now are Super Walmart. And so you could see, you know, just 20 years prior, you can make 20 bucks an hour. And now today, the best job is 10 bucks an hour. And you let those communities wither on a vine for a generation. And where do you think their temperature is going to be? See, what Bruce Rauner and Donald Trump do really well is prey on their people's economic anxieties and prey on the fact that people haven't been hurt in a long time. And then he goes to them and says, you know what? It's not the inequity in the tax code. It's not the fact that the wealthy have gotten ahead and everyone else has been left behind. No, no, no. It's those immigrants. It's those Chicagoans. It's whoever they want to blame. They do that so we never look to them to make sure they pay their fair share.
people listening tonight will probably text in as we're talking, saying Republicans aren't the only one to do that. Mm-hmm. Democrats have been doing that in the state of Illinois for years. The Democratic Party and the rule down in Springfield has done everything they can to protect themselves and protect that political class. You're running as a progressive, and there has been much made about a split in the Democratic Party where there's a moderate faction, one that rules both in the city of Chicago and in the state of Illinois, and then there's a progressive faction. How do you define progressive?
So I'm a progressive, but I also recognize that being a progressive means you have to make progress. And the whole point of democracy is to figure out ways to bring people along in a conversation or in a legislative agenda while they don't necessarily agree with every bit of it. I'll give you an example. I believe in the fight for 15. I believe in a $15 an hour minimum wage. But I was on the minimum wage task force here in Chicago. We settled on $13. Now, I could have held out for 15 and said I'm going to draw a line in the sand. But you know what? Right now, there are 500,000 people every year getting a raise until 2019 to get to $13 an hour. And after that, it's going to adjust to inflation. I was the chairman of the Working Families Task Force. And I was a sponsor on their legislation that guaranteed 9 paid sick days. But as a chairman, we made a compromise with the Illinois Restaurant Association and other stakeholders, and we landed at 5 paid sick days.
What is this word you keep saying, compromise? Is that a political term? No. Yeah. You've seen in the last, at least in the last 3 years, but I would say even longer than that, the art of the compromise in politics has kind of gone by the wayside. We've had less of I want this, so I'll settle for this. Instead, it's I want this, and I'm holding out until I get it.
Yeah, and I think what's happened is, again, this starts with government used to be aspirational. You know, John F. Kennedy, or even before that, you know, our campaign's called the New Deal for Illinois. It's based on the original New Deal. You know, FDR used to talk about creating programs that lift families up so there's an actual middle class, to tilting the balance of the economy towards working people, not a few. JFK talked about sending a man to the moon without having the technology to do it. And then Nixon comes in and starts demonizing government all the way through Reagan and Bush. And here we are today with Trump and Rauner. They hate government. They hate what it offers people because they don't need it. When you're so wealthy and you live so far above the system that you don't need public institutions, you don't understand why average people do. Mm.
Do you notice on your tour when you're in the state of Illinois and you're talking to people who voted for Trump that there is a disdain for government? Because that seemed to be part of what the pundits will say Trump tapped into, this anti-government sentiment.
There is a disdain for a system that they feel is rigged against them. I don't think people get up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, I'm a Democrat or Republican. What they do think about is my school funded properly and fairly and equitably? Do I have a good job? Do I have a shot at getting ahead? People don't get up in the morning and think about the local elected official unless that elected official is not doing their job. And over time, you start blaming the whole system and thinking it's rigged. That's what's happened. My thought has always been, look, this is the best way I can describe what's happened with automation and trade and jobs. You know, 40 years ago when jobs were leaving the inner cities, the response wasn't job training and investment or social service provision when the crack and cocaine epidemic moved in. Poverty went up, crack and cocaine moved in, and we created a racist war on drugs. And we jailed black and brown people. But now those same kinds of jobs are leaving white communities, and we have an opiate epidemic, and we're calling that a public health issue. Now, the injustices of the past have to be remedied. But just also know that what's the underlying issue? Jobs left and no investment came. This is true of black, white, and brown communities, and it's time to address it.
And absolutely, it's time to address it. And far too often do we hear politicians talk about that on the campaign trail and say, we're going to address this, and then they get into office and they can't. Mm-hmm. The system is not one that lawmakers can actually change. So do you have to walk a fine line when you talk about these are the injustices of the world and the state that we live in? And I'm going to fix them or I can't fix them. You know what I mean? Like the idea that I'm not sure that any politician can get at the root cause of injustice, inequality or racism.
Well, I mean, the truth is it can't something that be addressed in just 4 years or 8 for that matter. You have to lay the foundation for progress for people. So, you know, we talk about universal child care because we understand that for a lot of families, having a child means putting a parent out of work. And that often condemns them to poverty simply for choosing to have a family. Because the child care is often more than what they make in a month. Now, we can make some major gains by understanding that if we create universal child care, you're putting more money back in the pockets of parents. If we refinance student loans, we can grow our population by getting young people to move here, and put more money back
in
the pot.
Those are things that can be done at the political level.
Our inequality is a generational issue. But we as a society need to address it because look what's happened. This is an issue that transcends race, class, and geography. And now we have politicians telling us, no, 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 this inequality is because those immigrants, or like Bruce Reiner will say, those Chicagoans, let's expose them for what they're doing and then come together as a state. That is what we're trying to do.
Alderman Amaya Pawar in studio. He is running for the Democratic ticket on the state of Illinois, the gubernatorial race for 2018. We'll take a quick break here and we'll continue our conversation at the big table with Alderman Pawar. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Alderman Amaya Pawar, the 47th Ward here in Chicago, who is running for governor on the Democratic ticket, along with some millionaires and some Springfield politicians, a crowded field before we even kick off the idea. And, what I want to talk about here, we'll take some time before the news, because I want to talk about schools and some of the issues as well. But why don't we talk about Progressive Day? What's happening down in Springfield right now? Speaker Madigan canceled Democrats Day, which is a day that politicians get up on the stage at the Illinois State Fair and they hit the straw hat kind of traditional style of politics and they talk to voters or make speeches to voters and there's food. Yeah. It's the fair. This year, kind of inexplicably, the speaker said we don't need to do that anymore. We got the breakfast over at the Springfield Hotel. We're going to just get rid of that.
Yeah.
Which tells us a little bit, and you've talked about it, that maybe this is a little bit more about playing to fundraisers than it is playing to voters. Why do you want to bring Progressive Day to the Illinois State Fair?
I think the Democratic Party needs to own the fact that if we don't take income inequality seriously, that if we don't start looking at what's happening to working families, the party's in trouble and the state's in trouble and America's in trouble. And it's important to talk about these issues and create a platform for that. That's why I'm running. I'm never going to be the top money guy, and I'm never going to be, I'm never going to be anointed. That's okay. That's been the story of my entire career in politics. But it's important to provide a platform to progressives so that everyone feels like they're heard. And that's what this comes down to, is making sure that there is a stage. And that's why we're inviting all the other candidates. Let's show some unity as a party, but also through that unity, show that we are a big tent, that we can talk about all these issues, and that progressivism doesn't mean it's a fringe element of the party. That progressivism today is a reflection of income inequality in politics.
Do you think that there's an agenda to the speaker canceling Democrats Day? Does he have an anointed candidate and he said, this is my guy, we don't need to have the different candidates get up on stage?
I've never been one to speculate on why someone does what they do. It's just not, it just doesn't make sense. I believe it's important to provide a platform. We invited all the other candidates because, again, we're running a positive campaign. And I think that's important because I'm not going to do Bruce Reiner's job for him. What I am going to do is call out the hypocrisy of his actions. And I think that's what we have to do as Democrats.
Are we seeing a sea change, a shift when it comes to campaigns in the way that maybe the speaker's been around long enough to go, you know what, to get up on a stage, a straw hat kind of thing at the Illinois State Fair plays to too small of a voter block. Most campaigns are now done through money and television. We don't need to do this, press the flesh, go out to the door. Is there something to be said that the chair of the Illinois Democratic Party is moving in a different direction?
I think there's something to be said about politics in general. This idea that voters can be whittled down to a data point based on certain likes or tendencies or behaviors. People are people. I don't think they, like I said, get up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm a Republican or a Democrat. People like me forced them to choose come election time. Pressing the flesh, talking to people, that's what an alderman does. I mean, I think that's the unique perspective I bring to this race, is that I live in the community that I make decisions in, and I experience the good and the bad that comes with those decisions the very next day with my community, and I'll hear about it. But my job is part community activist, part city manager, and part legislator. And that retail component of being an alderman, that pressing the flesh, talking to people, looking them in the eye, that is how politics has always been done and always should be done.
There hasn't been a lot of success of aldermanic candidates at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been one that's been in the state house.
Yeah.
How do you address that, the idea that this isn't usually a normal path for a local alderman in the city of Chicago to jump to running for the governor?
You're right. I mean, I have a lot of state legislators tell me that they want my job. because that's where they want to be. Ultimately, you see, the thing that's interesting in Chicago, usually you want to start as a state legislator if you represent Chicago and move your way up to alderman.
Really?
And I'm going the other way. I want to go to Spring. Yeah. I think some of this is just about, I think politics has gotten so focused on, again, trying to fit people into a box and then trying to say, you know what, here's my box of voters. Here's what I think they want to hear. And now I'm going to create an image of myself so that, based on that. And what I tell people is instead is I have a record and I've also made mistakes. I stand on all of that and I present myself to you. I'm not trying to be the most progressive. I'm mm-hmm. not trying to be the biggest outsider. I am who I am.
Yeah.
I am comfortable in my own skin. Vote for Amaya Pawar, not because he's got some label in front of him. Vote for me because of my ideas and my entire record.
It is interesting because the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, we saw it have such success in the 2016 election, even here in the state of Illinois, which was a foregone conclusion that Hillary Clinton was going to win the state. Bernie Sanders came within, you know, mm-hmm. a fraction of taking that primary. There definitely is a push. So you can understand why people may say it's in vogue right now to run as a progressive, because there is a mounting concern for progressivism in the state of, not just the state of Illinois, but the country.
I think people have been left behind. I see this, again, that war on drugs. I go back to it again. The issues that are impacting company towns and small town America are things that have are the same issues that have ravaged urban areas over the last 40 years. The underlying issue is economics. If people feel comfortable in their job, in their life, they can pay their bills, they can put food on the table, they can save, they can hopefully send their kids to college, they don't run into the arms of a demagogue. Donald Trump does not exist without income inequality. Bruce Rauner does not exist if schools weren't woefully underfunded, that sort of thing. But these are the same people who have benefited. Bruce Rauner and Donald Trump have benefited from a system that tilts in their favor. And yet now they're telling us that the best way to help average people is to hurt them.
Yeah. Alderman Amaya Pawar is my guest. He's the 47th Ward Alderman. He's running for governor on the Democratic ticket. We'll continue the conversation after the news tonight, because I do want to get into some of the issues, schools, safety, mm-hmm. and also get at, you are trying, there's a sea change in the Democratic Party too. I mean, it's easy to point at who's in power and say they're doing it wrong, but a lot of people will look to what happened before the Republican took over yeah. 3 years ago and the mismanagement in Illinois. Alderman Amaya Pawar in studio tonight at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, Alderman Amaya Pawar, 47th Ward Alderman. The good old 47th Ward. I used yeah. to live in that ward back when Schulter was running it. It's different now, right? And you're running for governor. You know, this is the beginning of a series for us here on the Download to talk to all the gubernatorial candidates. But you are running in a very crowded race for the Democratic primary, one that includes millionaires, name recognition, people who have already endorsements that have already gone out,
mm-hmm.
even someone who has the progressive label in State Senator Biss. When you get into it, where do you see your path? How do you not only win primary, where the forces have already kind of set up against you, how do you get there and get to the governor's mansion?
I've never let other people decide what I do with my life. You know, when I first ran for alderman, you know, people on the inside laughed at me. They told me I couldn't win, you know, all kinds of things, you know, no one sent you, that sort of thing. And I just went and talked to people, and I knocked on every single door in my community. And I pressed the flesh, and I built a platform based on those conversations. And then, you know, when I got in, I listened to what my constituents told me to do, you know. And so the path that I see here is that the reason why we're barnstorming our way around the state is I recognize I can't knock on every single door, but I can go to every single county. And I do that because I don't believe it makes sense to write people off based on who they voted for in the last election. So most of the state is red on the map. But does that mean that those people don't deserve representation, or at least at minimum a conversation about who wants to be their next governor? So that's what we're doing. We're talking to people. I don't care whether you voted Democrat or Republican. I don't care if you're even going to vote for me. I want to hear from you because that is my job. I want to represent you. So yeah, I don't have the most money. I'm never going to have the most endorsements, but I've got 2,600 volunteers across 65 counties. I've been to over 55, 60 counties, and our plan is to get to every single one. So, I think if you're a traditionalist in politics, you look at all my measures that, and you say, well, you know, it doesn't add up. But I think if you followed me throughout my career, I've always shown that, you know, you can out-hustle people, you can go talk to people, you can go work with people and organize, and that's our plan here.
A lot of the issues I'm sure you're talking about when you talk to voters around the state have to do with the economy. Also schools. I mean, we're seeing a fight right now, one that just seems to continue, a budget fight that had a lot of victims in the last two or three years in Springfield, but also now a school formula issue where we heard that the state Senate is going back in session on Sunday. Schools look like they're going to start without an actual promise from the state about how much money they're going to get. Infighting, wrong numbers, a lot of stuff going on. When you talk to people and when you hear the issues that are being played out around school funding, what's your approach? What's your approach to making sure that schools are adequately funded in the state of Illinois?
I think, look, Bruce Rauner's approach is he's a fraud. I mean, he's pitting Chicago against the rest of the state. He uses race baiting and class baiting to pit people against one another. But here's the truth. The state of Illinois is the fifth largest economy in the country. Our gross domestic product is nearly $700 billion. We're also almost dead last in public school spending. That tells you, this is just about money and more of it. It's not spending it more efficiently or any other sort of buzzwords.
Because you'll hear the governor say, he was on with Roe not too long ago just saying, I want to make sure that it's equitable for North Chicago, for Waukegan. He named a lot of suburbs around Chicago, but not Chicago, saying, I want them to have an equitable school funding formula, and I want Chicago to get its fair share.
And SB1 does just that. It does that exactly. I think what Rauner is obsessed with is punishing the teachers union, and he wants CPS to go bankrupt. This has been his agenda. He went on, he goes around state and calls our schools prisons. He calls Chicago public school teachers illiterate. Yet when his own child couldn't get into one of the elite selective enrollments, he then bought his way in by making a $200,000 contribution. So these schools that he calls prisons and whose teachers he calls illiterate were good enough for his daughter when she didn't get in and he bought his way in. But today he wants them to go bankrupt for 385,000 kids, primarily kids who come from poor families, primarily kids of color. I mean, where's the morality? Where's the moral compass here? So, you know, I get really angry when I talk about this because it's just disgusting to think that public schools and poor kids, minority kids, are being held hostage in his game to destroy unions. He is not a good person.
That's what you think this is about. This is about destroying unions.
Destroying unions, destroying the Chicago Teachers Union. This is what it's about. He has always had a personal, you know, if you talk to people in Chicago in the know, they'll tell you about his crazy email rants. You know, he used to be, he's famous for sending out emails, slamming the teachers union, calling them illiterate, and, you know, talking about how terrible everything is. And, you know, most people in that world just ignored him. That's one of Bruce's rants. It'd be great if someone actually leaked those emails at some point. So you can see, like, you know, the things that we're saying today are a reflection of his character that he himself exposed to his own friends in the donor class in Chicago for many years.
If you got your chance to be the governor of the state of Illinois, how do you fix the issues that not only you're talking about, the pitting one against another, but how do you approach school funding? Beyond what Rauner's doing, beyond what Madigan's doing, what do you do? What does Alderman Pouwar do if you become governor of the state of Illinois?
It first starts with recognizing that equity does not mean equal. Equity means you spend more money where it's most needed. And that means spending more money in high poverty districts. More money. It just comes down to more money, not more efficiency, not more testing, not more standards on, you know, teachers. Teachers know what they're doing. The issue is, how do we get more dollars into those schools? Whether we're talking about Cairo, whether we're talking about East St. Louis, Chicago, Harvard, Galesburg. And I'll tell you, we just finished the One Illinois tour. And again, we went to Cairo, East St. Louis, Galesburg, Harvard. And look, these are majority-minority communities and majority white communities, and they're all struggling because they had major industries leave. They haven't seen any real investment, and their schools are inequitably funded. And when we talk to people, white, black, and brown, they all say the same thing. My school is the basic building block of our community, and if you keep forcing us to raise property taxes to pay for these schools so that we can provide supportive services or feed our kids, this is not going to work. They just want the state to step up and do what the Constitution spells out, which is its primary responsibility is to pay for public education. So the state has to increase the number of dollars. And so it's not just about an additional $3 billion. We need to spend $7 billion more.
I'm going to speak for Governor Rauner, but a lot of his argument is about the pension pickup.
Yeah.
It's essentially this number that continues. You see that the state legislature down in Springfield continues to kind of ball that number, that $300 million, $250 million, whatever it is. And we've seen it in five different iterations now in the last couple of years where it gets thrown in there and he continually vetoes. He's consistent in the sense that he does not want to have the state pay for the mismanagement of Chicago Public School. That's his words.
So here's what I think about the whole conversation on public servants. One, they're public servants, not servants. Two, promising a pension that's just slightly more than Social Security when they pay 8, 9, 10% a year, a check is not an outrageous benefit. But let's also hammer home one of Governor Rauner's talking points and pick that apart. He likes to tell you that people in the private sector somehow are losing out because public sector workers have a pension. So here's my question to folks. Does that bureaucrat or teacher or union carpenter or laborer who makes $60,000 or $70,000 a year, is that person driving income inequality? Is the $35,000 or $40,000 a year pension that a teacher gets, is that driving income inequality? Or is the $200 million a year that Bruce Rauner makes that pays the fraction of the taxes that the rest of us pay driving income inequality? Who is? And yet that same person who's driving income inequality, who makes $200 million a year, is telling us, let's bust these pensions. Let's pit private sector workers against public sector workers. Let's pit the middle class against one another. I'm tired of having this conversation. Let's call out what's really happening. Let's put into focus who is actually driving inequality.
Another issue that is one, and you're Chicago Alderman. Chicago has seen tremendous uptick in violence.
Yeah.
Continues to be not just a city issue, but a state issue, mm-hmm. and, of course, a national issue with the president. What's your approach to this? What's your approach to the fact that we have seen state politicians kind of turn their head and pretend it's not happening when it comes to the number of people who are affected by gun violence every day increases?
Which is why it goes back. I was in Danville a couple of weeks ago, and I marched with the Three Kings of Peace. They also have had similar issues on a different scale, but they too have a gang issue and lots of violence over the last couple of years. The underlying issue here is poverty and economic opportunity. People who wake up in the morning and see economic opportunity at their window don't pick up a gun and go sell drugs. So that issue needs to be resolved. So it goes back to the war on drugs. If we can see today that we need to provide treatment to folks who are dealing with opiate addiction, then we can't let people waste away in prisons for the same issues that are ravaging white communities today. So if you were arrested for a low-level drug offense, a nonviolent drug offense, why are you in jail? Why don't we use the money that we're spending on our jail system to provide services in the community, to create a job for you? So as governor, I would commute those sentences. If we want to fix the injustices going forward, we have to acknowledge what's happened in the past and institutional racism in a real way.
My last question tonight is just when I think about the power players in government in the state of Illinois, you think of a mayor. Mayor Emanuel, you think of a Cook County Board President in Tony Preckwinkle. Yeah. You think of a Speaker in Mike Madigan, a Senate President in John Cullerton, and a Governor in Bruce Rauner. But four of those five are Democrats.
Yeah.
We've seen Mike Madigan fight with his own party over and over and over. We saw it with Governor Quinn, even Governor Blagojevich before that. When I think of all those power players, how do you work with everybody and all the different ways that they control a piece of the pie? And it seems to me it would be a tough sell to say, I'm going to be governor of Illinois, I'm going to get all these things through, when you have to go through the same people that Governor Rauner had to go through as well.
Look, I beat the Chicago machine in 2011, and then I got in, and I worked with the same people who worked against me. And sometimes I had to work with them. That's democracy. That's how this is supposed to work. Look, I've never taken a dime from Rahm Emanuel. He's never offered me a dime. I've never taken a dime from Tony Preckwinkle or Mike Madigan. They've never been with me. They've never supported me. That's okay. But I've been pretty successful. I've been able to pass a dozen pieces of legislation in city council in my 6 years, all of them on social justice and economic justice, because I have set aside the politics and I work with people even if they didn't work with me or work alongside me or support me. Because that's what you do when you run for office. You work with people who don't agree with you. You work with people who work against you. I've proven that in the third largest city in the country as a total outsider. Now, I'm not running as an outsider. My experience on the inside is what I'm running on. But I also proved that an outsider who works with people who worked against them can get things done. And that's what I'm trying to, that's what I'm going around the state and telling people. I've got a record.
Alderman Amaya Pawar is the 47th Ward Alderman in the city of Chicago, and he is running for governor on the Democratic ticket. Alderman Pawar, thanks for taking some time out and being my guest at the big table tonight.
Thank you so much.
Just the first in a series of conversations with our gubernatorial hopefuls. We hope to get... we've heard him all over the WGN dial as well. Chris Kennedy was on not too long ago. J.B. Pritzker did a big table with us before he made the announcement that he was running for governor, more as a businessman. Senator Daniel Biss has been on with us a couple times. He was at the live show as well that we did at Cards Against Humanity. And, of course, Governor Rauner, who has yet to announce that he is seeking re-election, although he is. As Mike Fouché said, you don't raise that kind of money to sit it out. I'd love to sit down with Governor Rauner. Yeah, I like the format of the big table for these because they'll come out a lot, and you'll hear throughout the primary season different interviews. They'll talk at different points. They'll call in. And a lot of times, and great stuff. From both, a lot of times it's on Cochran in the morning, which is a perfect place for it. Same with Roe in the afternoon. And they'll call about the news of the day, or they'll talk to them about certain things, and it's point and spot on. But there's something great about having the hour, because not unlike what you heard with Alderman Pawar, you get a better understanding of where their passions lie. Where they may throw out a talking point, and they'll come back to that talking point. They'll come back to that talking point. Inequality in this case is one. But a war on drugs, you saw. But you saw that it wasn't necessarily he's just running through everything he possibly can with ADD. You know, like a lot of times politicians and people who are running for office will do. So, yeah, and mixed results on the text. Some people upset because they don't like what the Democrats have done to the state of Illinois. And I know that it's fun because and Alderman Pawar is not your typical Democrat. And so it is interesting that there's a lot of the vitriol that you're getting right now on the text line is mostly about Democrats and how they mismanage the state. What do you say about your party? I think there's something to be said, and I probably should have asked him that. But at the same time, he's running kind of on the outside of the Democratic. He's running for the Democratic primary, but at the same time, he's running against the anointed, the people who are the front runners. But it's interesting. I we'll see what happens there. As if his concept of hitting, pressing the flesh and going door to door, county to county, can work. It worked for Rauner in 2013 or 2014, didn't it? I mean, that was really. I mean, he's a billionaire from Chicago. From Winnetka or Kenilworth or where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that he was able to slap on the old flannel shirt and go downtown, go downstate and be able to resonate with the voters there. I mean, that seems to be a formula and a path to get a victory in the race. So, I mean, Alderman Pawar seems to be following in those footsteps. So we'll see.
And it's coming. The election's coming up in a couple of weeks now, right?
Yes, it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's. I think the primary this year is in March. Ugh, that's just a primary, just to whittle it down to the two candidates that will run for November.
Well, so it'll be great fall, though. You know, we'll have some debates. I think we're going to run a couple of debates here during our program.
Can I just be the guy who does I forgot the guy's name, but like outside the People's Court.
Interview guy?
Cochran and Roe, they can be the debate moderators. Yeah. I just want to be the guy like, Governor, can I talk to you real quick? How do you think it went in there?
I like that. Isn't that Doug Llewellyn?
Doug Llewellyn.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be the Doug Llewellyn of our debate coverage. You had a question in the second one there, JB. Didn't really go your way. What was going through your head?
And then he gives the deer in headlights sort of look.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It was about the toilet, man.
There was some inappropriate touching up on that stage, Chris. What was going through your mind? A lot of good stuff that you can do there. So maybe coming up, Doomtree. I'm very excited. Doomtree, independent hip hop collective out of St. Paul, Minneapolis. Favorites in the hip hop community for years of being that independent staple inside any line. They have their own record label. They come through town. They were just in town for Wicker Park Fest. They are a group of musicians that have done it their way and had success. Dessa and Paper Tiger, two of the collective. I think there's seven or eight people in Doomtree. Two of the seven or eight will be in studio in the 9 o'clock hour. And then coming up, Greg Flamm and Swap Meet, 10 o'clock tonight. All that coming up on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. Tonight, we welcome to The Download two of the members of the great Twin Cities-based indie hip-hop collective, Doomtree.
Well, I'm sure it's complicated, and I'm sure your story goes way back, but you're looking desperate lately, and now is not the time to look like that. I don't know if he did it, and I won't ask. There's a lot of good women with a lot of bad backs. Your man's in something heavy, it already looks bad. Careful what you carry on his behalf, and I'm sure he's thinking of you too. Not the type to snitch and run, but sometimes they say it's the plain truth. 99 problems. Well, I don't need to know, but there's a set of my keys left under your door. If you need a place to sleep tonight, that's what family's for. I don't need to know, but I'd put on my best fresh little black dress. Go get seen tonight. Work on that.
In studio with me tonight, two of the members, Dessa and Paper Tiger. Dessa's a rapper, singer, poet, writer, and former philosophy major, and you can hear all those skills at work in her music. Paper Tiger's a producer, DJ, who's produced not only Doomtree singles, but some of Dessa's solo work, including his own. Both of their music can be found on their own record label, Doomtree Records, and they continue to be one of the strongest independent voices in hip-hop, and they are both in studio tonight. Dessa, Paper Tiger, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Great to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
First off, it's interesting because you guys have had such a great run as a collective, mm-hmm. yet you do so much great work independently as solo artists. Is there one that you prefer more than the other? Are you at a point where you're solo artist first and Doomtree members second?
I think in a lot of ways it's like the things that you can't get from a solo career, you find in collaboration and vice versa. I wouldn't want to eat, you know, pizza every... Well, I might want to eat pizza every day, but I do feel like there are different parts of an artistic appetite that are met by both. Sometimes you want total artistic control, and after you've had it for a while, you're pretty tired of your own control, you know? And it's nice to be prompted into a new kind of collaborative lane by the introduction of someone else's ideas, right, who you wouldn't have come up with in 100 years.
So, and Pete and I were talking about this before you guys came in, even. You guys, as I mentioned, one of the strongest independent hip-hop voices in our country. The Minnesota scene, the Minneapolis scene, has always been really, really strong because of what you guys have done, the collective. And then I think, and I'm like, well, the word independent has kind of changed in a way where now independent's winning Grammys, you know, in this way that's a different, like, you know, of having you both in studio and you guys have been a part of an independent hip-hop movement. What does independent mean to you guys?
I mean, I think that the business of being independent has changed a lot. And like you said, independent artists now do get genuine looks from the industry. Well, here at Chance the Rapper, you know, here in Chicago, obviously being, I think, one of the biggest and brightest stars of that kind of indie takeover.
Right.
But I think that the through line, at least for me, has been artistic control. Is that when you think you've got a really good idea, you know, you test it like a raft lashed together, you know, with found timber. And if you end up being really confident in it, if you're an indie artist, there is no executive whose permission you have to seek.
You're not looking for the single.
To head out.
You know, right,
yeah, or even if it's like, this is weird, I think this could be a single. Well, it's only a minute and 45 seconds. How on earth could that be? I don't know, dude. I think this could be the single. And you really get to try those ideas in the marketplace instead of being, you know, shut down by somebody in a suit who says, ooh, this doesn't test well.
For me, indie is doing things on our own terms, basically. Like, when and why we make music is up to us.
There's no collective contract or anything like that.
Being type A, I remember trying to draft up collective contracts, and I made a PowerPoint, and I got a whiteboard, and everyone was like, cool story, let's go get a beer.
You know, as being considered a quote-unquote collective,
And how is that different from a band? What you guys do as a hip-hop collective different than a seven-piece R&B band or any other touring band that we might know?
We help each other out as solo artists, I think, first and foremost. And there's a lot of permutations within the group. Like, in a band, if you make a record with a band, there wouldn't be, you know, three songs without the drummer.
Right.
Necessarily. Like, we decide what a Doomtree song is based on how the form of the music comes together instead of relying on they all have to do this.
The construct.
Exact thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the exact. Yeah. This yeah. is right. Right.
You know, I think there had been maybe three or four moments in Doomtree's history that had really tested what my understanding of what the collective meant. Even when, so Paper Tiger, who's also a graphic designer, he put together like a hardcover book. And we were trying to figure out how to get that made into the real world. You know, it was like these candid photos from 10 years or so of touring together. And realizing like, okay, well, if we have a book, then I guess the Doomtree Collective is a publishing house. You know, and if you have a ballet, then now we're a dance troupe. I think it was Sims finally who had said, I think the Doomtree just is whatever we say it is that's helpful for the members of Doomtree. It really is kind of a fluid entity that exists to help share the work that we believe in.
You know where they use the word collective, and it probably applies, is artists. You know, there'll be artists who they're a certain collective, and they don't necessarily collaborate on the same painting, but they share the same aesthetic, and they put things. So maybe it's more in that form than it is the idea of a structured, formal band.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also vouching loosely for one another's stuff, meaning, you know, when Paper Tiger has an EP coming out, that I'm looking out for that and sharing news of that release, and he's going to do the same for me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dessa and Paper Tiger in studio, two of the members of the great Twin Cities-based indie hip-hop collective Doomtree. They were just in town playing Wicker Park Fest, also had a show sold out at Subterranean. I mean, you guys must come through Chicago a lot. I mean, as you tour throughout your career, how's the relationship like when you're a Twin Cities-based hip-hop collective? Is there any competition when you know, like you have a scene, Chicago has a scene? How do you share the stage in that regard?
I felt like it was actually, this was one of the hardest, like, musical communities. I felt, what's that movie with John Keaton? The Say Anything? I felt like we were in the rain for a long time. I felt that way. Like, come on, you know? And then I felt like once we got it. This now feels like a really welcoming, comfortable second home away from home.
Why do you think it wasn't back then, just it was more territorial?
I mean, maybe it's the case that there is a really healthy scene here, so rap is not an import, you know what I mean? But I think also, you know, it's a big city and eager to be impressed. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, I felt like even New York and L.A. were a little easier, at least from my perception, than Chicago. What was yours, Papes? Well,
I also think that somehow due to, like, our fan base, like, the culture that we, like, the cultural sector that we operate in isn't necessarily, it's just sort of like the hip-hop scene of whatever city
we're in
competition with, or, like, the hip-hop scene comes to us. Our fans are kind of from all over the place. You know, a lot of people will come up to us and say, I don't really listen to rap, but I love Doomtree, you know, and
so you're playing in a different ballpark.
Yeah, we're kind of like our own thing, and I think our fans are kind of into that, too.
Well, I always think about it. In Chicago, and it's changed over time, but Chicago was always known as the backpack hip-hop here and socially conscious, and you had Common and other places. Yeah. I don't know much about, except for the great artists that, you know, whether it be you guys or Rhymesayers or the others that have come out of Minnesota hip-hop. What is the feel, the ethos that comes off of a Twin Cities hip-hop scene?
I think that it might be that Paper Tiger and I have different responses on this, but I would initially say that, whereas I think you have like this brand in Chicago, this really politically conscious rap, whether it's, you know, Lupe or Common. Whereas I feel like in Minneapolis, when the indie hip hop scene there really started becoming fertile and growing, that it was a do no harm brand of conscious rap instead of a, like, let me talk to you about the political rally. Yeah, right, you know what I mean? Next month. I think it was more focused on introspective, like, personal lived experience. I feel like it was a more kind of first-person testimonial as opposed to agenda-based, conscious-raising rap. Lyrically, obviously.
Yeah, I think lyrically, I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, on more of the music side, I come from not just a specifically hip-hop upbringing. I listened to and was involved in a lot of different types of music. And I think, similar to the same way Chicago is, for us growing up in Minneapolis, we found musical influences from both coasts. We weren't listening to just one side or anything. So all these things kind of mashing together. it felt different, and it felt indie in nature, just the fact that we're kind of like taking all these different influences together and making our own thing. Just kids in basements.
But do you live in Brooklyn now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, can you tell the difference? I mean, when you're in New York City and you're in Brooklyn, can you say, as a musician, as more of a producer than a lyricist, can you tell the difference between a sound that might be from the Midwest, that might be from Minneapolis, and a sound that someone produced right down the block in Brooklyn?
I think I used to more years and years ago, but the way that especially music and art works on the internet and social media, it doesn't need to be from anywhere.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just sort of, it's that person's output.
You know, it's funny because I as a knee-jerk reaction to hearing a new rap album that I like, and like Paper, I listen to a lot of varied stuff, but if I hear a rap record that I like, my first instinct is to go, where's this from? But I realize that I don't care anymore what the answer is. I just can't. That's my reflex. Yeah.
And it's so funny because I was just watching The Defiant Ones on HBO, mm-hmm. and that was all about place. You know, mm-hmm. that was about, you know, this. We had a sound in the West Coast rap and Dr. Dre and NWA, and that was about a certain time and place. But you're right. Maybe place is kind of fading away when it comes to hip-hop mm-hmm. and music in general.
I think it was really important when we started Doomtree, and I think it's why we sound the way we do. But I would imagine that if we started it today, it would be a much different translation, just given how accessible things are.
Also, I'm like more interested in ethos than geography as a binding factor. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that person's sense of humor, value, whatever. That's more interesting glue to me than like zip code.
And you wonder how much place affected that ethos, especially in the maybe like early times, because you would have that this town was more accepting of a Lupe Fiasco because it fit into, but that has changed. I mean, think of all the different artists that come out of Chicago now that don't sound anything like the politically conscious rap.
And I think, you know, initially there's an underdoggery in starting in Minneapolis, in part because your big hope when you throw a show isn't that a dude in a light gray suit is going to walk in the back and pull a contract out of his attaché.
Right.
You know, your big hope is for like free drinks all night. And so there is this very DIY ethic, and I think there's a lot of permeability in our genre designations because of that. So I think one of the things that differentiates Minneapolis from Chicago, at least 8 years ago, obviously I'm not from Chicago, so I'm not, my finger is not on that pulse as readily, but was the genre blending. So like in Minneapolis, it's not unusual to share stage with a punk act and then like, you know, a folky rock outfit and then a rap act. But I remember realizing, I don't know if that'll work here, after somebody had to, I think it was Cecil, had to duck a projectile. So.
Sure. Projectiles usually will be the way people
strong
tell
feedback.
You. Yeah, that's the feedback. That's before feedback. Before Twitter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, as we wrap up here, I'm interested because both of you as artists, and I would ask all the Doomtree collective, but you have had the opportunity together to evolve as Doomtree, but also as solo artists. And I'll ask you both individually how you see that happening. For you, Des, I listened to the last solo record, it's a lot of singing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different kind of sound than some of the Doomtree stuff that I had known. You know, and I think about that's just probably a basic evolution of you as an artist. And I'll ask you the same thing of you, Paper Tiger, and the remixes and the things that you do. How have you both evolved over the years being in Doomtree, and how has it affected you as artists?
I think part of it is when I joined Doomtree, I knew what I didn't want to be perceived as, to be honest. So I knew that very often a woman on stage with a rap group would be perceived as the hired vocalist who sang the choruses. So for the first few years of my career, I didn't want to sing too much because I was worried that I would be relegated to kind of a second class citizenship in the collective. And then by the time my most recent record came out, I was like, I like singing. I like harmony. What are you going to do? So, you know, spend the next 20 years making sure somebody doesn't think that you're the girl who sings hooks, you know? So for me, I think it's probably about becoming confident within this group of friends and fellow musicians to try the music that I'm interested in. And it, I think, has taken their friendship and their, and the collaboration to feel comfortable exploring new terrain.
Yeah, I think the same too. It's been 15 years now that we've been actively making music together. So just in that, there's so many factors. There's like the factor of technology that has just changed how I actually make things on a production side. And I always think of this thing that Beak always talks about when he talks about how we first started. We were very like, let's make a hip hop group and be like super, super hip hop. And we were making things thinking like we're doing like straightforward hip hop. We're going to be part of this. And everyone's like, you guys are so weird. Why
is what innovative this stuff?
Yeah, how did like you think? Yeah. And we're like, no, it's just rap. We're just making rap. I think that we were consciously trying to make things. And I think as, you know, throughout the years, we've gotten a lot more comfortable saying, this is what we think rap is.
Yeah.
And as a collective and a solo artist as well, like I think that I've been more open to taking in some of my other influences and putting them into my output.
Yeah. Awesome to have you guys here tonight. Paper Tiger, Dessa, two of the members of the great Minneapolis-based indie hip-hop collective Doomtree. They were just in town for Wicker Park Fest, and we'll continue to follow your careers, and hopefully when you guys come back to town, you come back in studio.
Thanks, and I'll see you at Riot Fest.
Oh, you're going to be at Riot Fest. Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for being here.
I haven't met a locked door yet that I couldn't beat. On a chain around my neck, I keep my skeleton key. Don't waste your worry on me. I always find what I need. Come and go as I please. I've got my skeleton key. Don't waste your worry on me. I always find what I need. Come and go as I please. I've got my skeleton key. By now it's just a simple trick. Tumblers catch and click, then turn the key. But I found work and welcome everywhere I've been. 'Cause everyone's got some place they wanna be let in. Don't waste your worry on me. I always find what I need. I don't even go as I please. I've got my skeleton key. Don't waste your worry on me.
Going gaga over the eclipse. I feel like that's the maybe that's the story that unites us all together, the fact that the moon is blocking the sun. Right. Jeff was telling me, from Rokan Show, he was saying that this is the first time that in terms of the idea of it all being in the United States,
mm-hmm.
across the United States at once. It's the first time since like the 18th century. And I'm like, okay, well, what else? Are you looking forward to the eclipse?
I am looking forward to it. I mean, because you can see it from here, like 80%.
Yeah. Oh. But you know it's going to be one of those days where it's cloudy, you know, or like the smog. Or something, and be like, well, there's nothing. You can't see anything. I'm so used to, I guess the issue is, as a Chicagoan who lives downtown, like I live close enough to the downtown area,
mm-hmm.
that I feel whenever the country, the city, anyone goes gaga for anything up in the sky, I'm like, yeah, I ain't going to see it. You know, like you don't see the stars, mm-hmm. you don't see anything.
Yeah.
It's like we've created a bubble of garbage around us. So I need to, maybe for that day, I need to take off. Make my way to Wheaton.
Yeah, or like just that, you know? Zip down 57, cruise down south.
Yeah, right? Because I do want to see it, but at the same time, like...
It's so funny, too, because, yeah, like, anytime you're anywhere remote, so like when I was in Lubbock, Texas, a couple of weeks ago, and you look up and you see stars, and it's always, like, the biggest thing that you've found a new planet. It's like, oh my God, stars!
Well, my parents live out in kind of rural Wisconsin area. So whenever I go up there, especially with my son, it's always like, look at that one. Oh, look at that one.
They're just stars.
What is that? This makes a pattern. Look, it looks like a spoon. So. All right, coming up, you know what we get to talk about? I mean, Swap Meet's coming up with Greg Flamm, but I want to talk, before Greg comes in, I want to talk about the uniforms this weekend. The Major League Baseball is doing, is it this weekend or next weekend, 2 weeks ago, where they're all certain new uniforms, but they're putting their nicknames on the back of the jerseys, and they unveiled them today. And I was like, last year we did Picnic, we did all the nicknames, it was so creative, Rob and Esmeralda and everybody, all the texters, everybody came up with these great names. To look at the nicknames that they pulled, we'll talk about it, it's disappointing. All right, coming up, we'll talk about these nicknames. Because I feel like last year we did God's work When we gave these Cubs World Series champions substantial creative nicknames, maybe they didn't like them. Maybe they never heard them. But I feel like they put out the jerseys that they're going to be wearing in a couple weeks, you know, with their nicknames on the back. And they're so rudimentary. And they're this idea of like shorten the name and put a Y on it. It's ridiculous. That's not a nickname. We'll talk. We'll go back over that coming up here.
Can't do that.
You can't. No, we're going to have to do a throwback segment to say, listen, we need to refresh because it was our brain power, Esmeralda, you, Rob, everyone, that kept the energy up. And what happened? They won the World Series, right? This year, we're not talking nicknames. We're not spending enough time on it. You know, they're game up.
I mean, Doug Gilmore, former NHL great. His nickname was Killer.
That's perfect.
Boom.
There you go. See? It wasn't Gilly.
No.
Hey, what's up, Gilly?
Wrigley Field had many moments in the sun. I'm talking baseball. Glenn Beckett and the Andy Cubs. Baseball. Kessinger and Randy. Santo and the Vulture on the club. Handsome Ransom. DeFondi. Kenny Hubs. Talking baseball. Baseball and the Cubs.
Oh, man, I could listen to that all night. Oh, so good. Download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman. We're talking a little baseball. Tough break for the Cubs today. Wilson Contreras, who truly has become the catcher that the Cubs were hoping he'd grow into. He's had a tremendous second half. The 18-8 record had a lot to do with him with timely hits, good defense. He hit a little dribbler to third today, and while running to first, pulled up limping. That kind of limped to where he fell to the ground. MRI tonight, and DL stint likely.
Mm-hmm.
Not DL Hughley, DL disabled list likely. Not good for the Cubs, who are. But you know, as you said, I mean that's baseball, and the hope is that he doesn't miss any more time than say a month or something like that.
Yeah.
He'll be back and ready and ready to contribute to the team in the playoffs.
There's the meme type thing going on Twitter right now where your rap name is Young plus the reason you cried last night. So Young blah blah blah, and then I saw somebody put Young Wilson Contreras' hamstring.
That's good. All right. That's what he got Alex Avila for. The problem is, I know from being a fantasy baseball expert, Pete.
Yeah,
I know a lot about hamstring injuries. Seems like that's what's going around right now. Matt Kemp, great outfielder for the Atlanta Braves, has got a hamstring problem. He's had it all year. It's dogged him all year.
Well, luckily Contreras has got some age on his side. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Probably does, right? But I mean, it's right now. Kemp went down probably about 2 weeks ago, and I just got an update. You know, my sources tell me
the red dot next to his name on the fantasy page
that he's resuming baseball activities. So that just means they said no timetable for his return. This is Matt Kemp, but I'm just saying it takes about a month plus to get through a hamstring, depending on how bad it is. But being a catcher, that can't help.
Yeah.
We'll know more probably by the morning. But this on the heels of the Cubs tweeting out the players' weekend, the uniforms, the new uniforms that they're going to be wearing, which is like a baby. It's like a blue overload.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I think about it. But really what grabbed everyone's attention was that they put the nicknames of the players on the back of the jerseys instead of their full names.
Mm-hmm.
And some people on Twitter even mentioned it. Hey, you know, sent to me, hey, are these the nicknames from last year that the download gave to each and every player? If you remember last year, Matt Klein came in, people called in. It was a great segment where every week
we'd put
a different player up and we would essentially give them the nickname. We'd crowdsource a nickname
mm-hmm.
for them. Because the reason we started it was because we felt like a lot of the nicknames that were being thrown around the Cubs locker room were pretty rudimentary. They were pedestrian, if you will.
Yeah.
A lot of shortening a name and putting a Y on the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, K-Bry. and, you know, looking at the list here, you got a Schwarbs. You got a Stropey. What? What is Stropey? You got an Addy. You got a Lester. It just says Lester. I love that he doesn't have one.
Does he, I mean, I know because this is like in a, they're, you know, calling back to the days of the old XFL where you get to, you know,
put your nickname
choose
up.
A
yeah,
nickname. Yeah. So does Lester just say, does he forget? Like, hey, the deadline for your nickname, Lester, is Thursday.
There's an all-staff email going around the Cubs locker room. Like, guys, I only have about 7 of the 30 that I need. I really need to get your nickname if we're going to put this out.
Does he forget? And then it's like the kid that shows up with his regular clothes on school picture day or whatever, you know?
John, hey, it's Matt from Communications. Listen, I know this nickname stuff's real. I know your great game last night. It's just we really need your nickname. Just if you just reply, oh, I've CC'd your assistant on this. If we could just get an answer by 4 o'clock, that'd be great. What's up with Lester? He just hasn't gotten back.
So does he forget, or yeah, does he choose?
Or is
to just
he more the guy
Lester?
Like, I don't do nicknames.
Yeah,
I'm John Lester. I'm not going on Dancing with the Stars. So, that's Rossi. Rossi. See, same thing.
Terrible. So like when Lester's hanging out with his buddies, they just call him John.
Yeah, I guess so.
Nothing or Lester?
Hey, John? Yeah. I mean, what do they call? What do your buddies call you?
Zippy.
I'm glad I asked. Zippy. They call me Justin.
Huh.
I think. I can get a Jay Coffs.
Yeah.
Or Koffelmeyer. That's always
that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
What's up, Koffelmeyer? And what's up? But these nicknames, KB, Schwarbs. 44. Who's 44? Tony.
Rizzo.
Is that Rizzo?
Yeah.
That's his nickname is Tony? That's not a nickname.
That's a name.
That's a name.
Yeah.
That's his 49. Name. So Snake is Arrieta? Dumb. Willie? Is that for Wilson Contreras?
Mm-hmm.
Addy? Zarilla? That's at least close. That's probably the Happer? Oh, come on. Listella? Like, that's his real name. That's Tommy Gunn's real name there. Koji, that's his first name.
Yeah.
El Mago, who would that be? Number 9.
Baez.
Oh. Number 62 is just an O?
I don't know who that is.
Is there like a 62 O? There's a Monty, which I would assume is from Montero, is not on the team.
Mike anymore. Montgomery.
Oh, there you go. There you go, buddy. Deuce. Who's... Who is Deuce? I know people are listening right now. They're mad. They're like, Deuce is
Brian Dunsing.
Oh,
classic relief pitcher, yeah, Brian Dunsing.
305J. That's a weird one. Hendo. Jay Hay. That's, yeah, okay, we get that.
Sort of a nickname. So that's a nickname.
Carl's Jr. I guess that's a play on the burger.
Mm-hmm.
Rondi. I'm assuming for Rondo or for Rondon. Tico, number 5. Tico. Stropey. And then my favorite, Lack. For John Lackey. Lack. Where's Quintana on this one?
He couldn't fit old wooden teeth on Lackey, the back of Lackey's uniform.
Well, I love the nickname we came up for. Okay, let's go over the ones we gave these guys, right? Can we do that? You have a list?
Yeah, I got the list.
So let's work. Lackey, we had Big Country. I remember that, right?
Yeah, that's a great one.
The country hat, and he's sort of a country guy, so we voted. It's Big Country. Mm-hmm. That's so much better than Lack. Hey, what's up, Lack? Big Country, that's better. Stropey.
Let's see, for Pedro Strop, what do we have?
We had White Castle. Wasn't that White Castle?
Because he has a slider.
Because
he has
a
slider.
A mean slider. So Strop was White Castle. That's so much better. Carl's Jr. There was Carl Edwards Jr. What do we have for him? Do we do him?
Yeah, we did him, I think.
The big tall guy. I feel like he was skinny.
Vitamin K. Vitamin K for Carl Edwards Jr. That's a good one.
It is great. See, there's some effort. Esmeralda, she was the judge. Those are great.
Yeah.
That's a great nickname. Vitamin K. It's better than Carl's Jr. Jay Hay for Hayward. What did we do? Haymaker on that one?
Haymaker, yeah.
Haymaker, okay. Zorilla, which is Ben Zobrist. We did Zorro.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Tommy LaStella was Tommy Gunn. It's so easy.
It's making me mad seeing these.
Right? What else we have? There was the very controversial KB, K Bry, which we went for Roy.
Mm-hmm.
This was a controversial one because Roy had a couple of meanings. Roy, Rookie of the Year. Then we also had Roy and Roy Hobbs, the natural.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, let's call him Roy. Let's do one of these. Because the idea was that you want to yell out, come on, Roy. And then everyone around you goes, why do you call him Roy?
Mm-hmm.
Rookie of the Year, Roy Hobbs, natural. And everyone goes, you're so smart. You're so clever. That was good. For Rizzo, I can't remember right at the end. That was like one of the last ones we did.
That was also another controversial pick because I think Roger was in for Esmeralda that night.
He didn't get the game.
And he didn't. Yeah, he didn't know what to pick, or he picked two. Because I have two written down. I have ZD.
Oh, that's great.
And Wizzo.
Oh, yeah. I like ZD. Yeah.
ZD.
ZD, yeah. And you know what? The judge has spoken a year later. It's done. Arrieta. What do we have for Jake Arrieta? He was towards the end, too, right?
Iceman.
Iceman. Like Val Kilmer in Top Gun. Right? These are great. Willie Contreras was... I knew this. Peppers.
Sweet peppers.
Sweet peppers.
These are so good. These are so good.
What do we have for Elmora? Elmora was double A or something like that.
Whopper Jr.
Whopper Jr.
Going the sandwich route.
Right? John Lester. What do we have for Lester? I feel like he would have been a good one.
The Bald Eagle. Come on, Lester. Bald Eagle back there.
Nope, it's just Lester. And then Addison Russell.
Smooth criminal.
These are great. We need to put these up. We need to put t-shirts. We need to go do joke t-shirts at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Right? Like, do they still have the guy out there with a stick who's selling, like, Green Bay Sucks t-shirts?
Yes, they do. Multiple.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't run those guys off and turned that into a Shake Shack. Turn that guy into a Shake Shack. That guy's the best. Where it's like
questionable.
Yeah, the joke racist t-shirts. Yeah. Where you're like, wow, you know, Kosuke Fukudome doesn't play here anymore, guys. it's usually where you're like, wow, you guys really went there. Thanks for doing that. Which ones did I skip here? I mean, what are some of the other players we had? Because there was Chapstick for Chapman. There was
some of the really good ones are people that have left. Matt Caesar, the Crouton Kid. I mean, that's great.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Or my favorite was Dexter Fowler, which was free range.
Free range, yeah. I think that was Rob's.
Yeah. And then 847 just says, hi, Justin. Hi, Pete. One of my proudest moments on the download was giving Jason Hamill the nickname Ham Jam.
Yeah. That was one of the better ones.
Right? Ham Jam, because he was into Pearl Jam, something like that. What else? Is that pretty much it? I think we nailed
them
all.
Let's see. We got Grimm, the Grim Reaper. I'm not sure where he's at in there.
Yeah, where he's at.
Hendrix, the Calculator.
Oh, I guess that's what Hendrix was, Hendo.
Oh, what? Really? That's terrible.
The Calculator's great. Because I thought it was the Professor. I thought that was where they went with that. I thought I see the Professor whenever they talk about Hendrix.
Yeah, they do, but ours is the Calculator.
Yeah, yes. But I'm saying
I'm
starting to feel like this might be an intern's job. To like just come up with these nicknames that they put on the back of these jerseys.
I have to give
credit to the whole crew, because still a sterling achievement in the annals of nicknaming, radio station nicknaming. This is the best. I mean, this is, and those are World Series champion nicknames. It's not just sort of half-assed, you know, game in front in the NL Central.
And if I recall, I feel Joe Maddon might have a nickname up there too, because he seems, you know, the type of guy that would, you know, because he likes bits and such. Because remember, we gave him a nickname. It was Papa Smurf. I mean, how good are those?
Those are great. And I give all the credit to the download listeners who called in and text in, and Esmeralda picked them. But that was so fun, just pop a Smurf. Right? That, I mean, and if you have these nicknames as your arsenal and you go to Wrigley Field and you maybe it's a rain delay and you can get close enough, you know, and you get the opportunity to yell out, hey, come on, Papa Smurf, make a pitching change. People go, this guy's genius. And then you go, then you don't have to tell him, I learned it from the download. I learned it from the download. You don't have to say that. You can just tell us later that it went well.
See the Bears this year.
I think the key, because we kind of were at the same time, we're thinking about the Sox last year because the Sox started off strong. And remember there was all the talk of Sox Cubs, Subway Series. Oh, gosh. That turned out. And I think we were lucky to say, oh, let's just see how the next month plays out. And the Sox tanked. And, you know, could you imagine if we did that all for the Sox last year? Wouldn't have worked. Chris Sale, you know. But the Bears, if the Bears can start 2-0, 3-0, I feel like that, you're right.
Yeah,
let's get some nicknames going for the Bears.
They start 0-3. The nicknames might be funnier.
All right, coming up, Greg Flam's in the building. Time for the swap meet. You got something you want to try out on us, something you want to brag, something you think might be worth some money, something that might be hanging in the foyer, in the front room, right? And you're like, I wonder if those dogs playing poker, that's worth something. And like I said, I feel like we should do a grab bag gift if you have the best swap meet item. You get to pick something off my desk at some point or another. You know, I got to clean that desk. So, it's funny because I had a friend come through today and he brought his little boy. It's like 5-year-old boy, right? And I had him come through the studio when Ro was on break, and we went back to them just showing him around, and he came into our office, Pete, and it was like he's like, what's this? What's this? I'm like, well, that's a broken bobblehead. It's like, what's this? Well, that was left over from Gary Meyer when this was his office. There's a lot of that, you know. Well, that, I'm not sure what it is, but it's sharp. It's got razor edges. That is a Keurig machine that we don't use. There's a lot of that. So there's a lot going on in the office. I feel like we should just do the swap meet in the office. 312-981-7200. If you got stuff you want to brag about, you want to see what it's worth, tonight's the night. Greg's in studio. I'm feeling good. This is garage sale season. August is always a good month for the swap meet. So start us off strong tonight. 312-981-7200.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here I am.
That's right. It's a download here, and it's time for Swap Meet. 312-981-7200. Greg Flam at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Good to see you, buddy. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
This is where we evaluate your commemorative items, your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk.
Yep. Let's do it.
We don't use a laser pointer. Like the old
right,
okay. Howard Stern bit.
Right.
No,
okay.
This is just we take calls. All right. So this is, like you said, very excited in the sense that this is high season for garage sales.
Sure
August
is.
Early on. And you've come through tonight. We start tonight with what you bring in, of course. And this hunking fridge poster.
Large.
So good.
This one is an actual ad poster or promo poster for Pontiac back in 1986. It's a takeoff on the original poster. Looks just like this. And then Pontiac just kind of put their stuff on there. But it's a nice price poster. It's probably about $40 to $60.
What makes this one stand out? Just the fact it's a
fridge? You know, I think when people just think back of Super Bowl as far as what they want, like in their man cave, their fridge, you know, or Ditka, you know, as far as if they're going to do one person.
I'm a Wilbur Marshall kind of guy.
Right.
You know, I want the junkyard dogs. I don't want.
Yeah. Or Peyton, of course. Yeah. But as far as the higher priced ones are Ditka, Peyton, and fridge. Hmm. And so this one, there are no large fridge posters on eBay right now.
Really?
Yeah. That tells you how much, you know, they sell. They keep buying
My favorite is that it says get 720 cash back, not for WGN, but for 72 in the fridge. And then it says, now on a full-size Pontiac Parisian.
Right. Paris, I don't know, Parisian. Yeah,
a Parisian. Parisian. A Pontiac Parisian.
Yep.
There you go. That's an 85 car.
Yeah, I wonder if Fridge signed off on that. What is that?
He's like, I love the Parisian.
Yep.
He's like, can we get a French car?
He was probably more sold on the 720 number than the car. But yeah, and the signature is obviously a fake signature. It's not real.
Oh.
But yeah, okay. So there's that. But, you know, and then the thing I'm psyched about is I found this Napoleon Bonaparte mirror.
Look at this.
And this is like 80s.
So this is a decorative mirror, like the kind of thing that you would get at the fair, but it's a little bit more intricate. It's a Napoleon 80s mirror.
Like 8.5 by 11, I guess that would be.
It's weird.
Yeah, and most people will remember the art style with like Kiss or Boston, the progressive rock bands of the 70s.
Good.
Those will be at the carnival. This, I don't think, was at a carnival. This is a little bit more off the wall.
Nothing better than getting your jean jacket on,
right?
Throwing darts at a couple balloons.
And here, we were talking before.
Yourself a Bon Jovi mirror.
Yeah, and the early, you know, late 70s mirrors, those are like 80 to 150 or more.
What?
And the reason they're that is because you got them at the carnival. You had to get that thing home in one piece. And how many of those broke on the way home, you know? And or people traded them for the large Rasta banana like Pete, maybe.
That's right.
Going back to last year's.
There you go, the taste of this plains.
Right.
It's a swap meet here, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. Let's do this. Let's go to Pam. Let's kick it off. Pam, what do you want to brag about, Pam?
Hey, Pam.
I have, and I don't know, you know, the value of the thing. It's a huge frame, too. It's a very nice frame of Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra.
Okay.
Real nice picture of the both of them. And at the bottom, it's their signatures in like the gold pen that you get signed at like I'm saying Comic-Con, but it could be anywhere.
Sure. Did you?
And I don't know the value of it.
Did you get the photo? Where'd you get it?
My son acquired it at work. And we don't know the value of it. And I have a garage sale coming up, and I wanted to sell this item, but I don't know what the price it is.
You have to put this in the middle of your garage sale, right in the driveway with a nice around it.
Exactly, the lighting and everything.
Yes.
Track lighting. How big is the poster, first off, or picture, rather?
Oh, boy, you're asking. It's big. That's all I can say.
Okay, so it's more like a poster than an 11 by 17 picture or something.
Not 11 by 17. It's bigger than that.
Bigger than that. Wow. Oh, geez.
And it's in a real nice frame.
Yeah, and if that's signed with live marker, like you said, gold or silver marker they use, if that's live ink, I mean, that could be, I want to guess, minimum $600, $500, $600 minimum.
Wow. There you go.
And it's you're probably not going to sell it at a garage sale, but you can try. You know, just stick to your guns, you know, on it.
Where else would I put that?
You can put it up for consignment somewhere since it's a large item, or you could use one of the valet like auction sites where they'll actually box it for you and everything, so you don't have to worry about breaking it once you hand it.
Oh, that'd be real nice.
Yeah,
where are those?
I think some of the UPS stores do that, but you can just Google that, like eBay valet.
We point you in the right direction, Pam. Yeah. You got to go get it. Thanks, Pam.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, it's just something tells me it's going to be Saturday and someone's going to go, I like that. $40 should be like sold.
Right. That's about what you get offered for it. Yeah.
All right. So 312-981-7200. Let's do one text and then we'll take a break.
Okay.
The text I have here says I have a lightly used. So that's what is lightly used? Nirvana Unplugged cassette.
Oh, cassette.
Signed by Christine Novoselic. That's the, and I'm saying his name wrong, but that's the guy who's the bass player for Nirvana.
Exactly. His signatures alone.
He throws his bass up and hits him in the head. Right,
right. His signature alone is about 15 plus.
Oh, really?
But that signed cassette, I mean, if it was an album and it was signed, I would say 100.
Nobody likes the cassettes.
But the cassette's so small, and it's not, you know, I mean, you have to take the sleeve out, I guess, to have that framed, and it's just not, you know, ideal for framing and display. But it still would probably get, I'm thinking, start an auction at 35 and see what happens.
Do those kind of items, the items of more pop cultural relevance of the 90s, 2000s, do they sell as well when you start talking about bands like Pearl Jam, Nirvana?
Oh, yeah,
like
I mean, Pearl Jam stuff sells no problem.
Nirvana stuff still sells. You know, progressive rock, for the most part, any 70s, late 70s progressive rock band will sell.
You're really into the progressive rock
bands. I am. Well,
so that'd be like Yes?
Yeah, Yes, Rush.
Yeah, 2112, you know, right?
The phone lights are going to light up now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2112 changed my life, man. Sixth grade, and I heard that. I'm like, oh, man.
I love it. All right, 312-981-7200. Here's what we'll do. We will take a quick break. We'll come back. Greg Plamm in studio. We're doing Swap Meet, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Stay with us. It's a Swap Meet here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Greg Plamm with me as well, at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. All right, this is the night that we hope there's a run on decorative mirrors of 70s progressive rock bands.
Yeah.
If you have one of those, if you were able to get it home
right
after you popped a couple balloons with some darts, and you were able to get it on the corner of your mirror, so you had mirror on mirror,
there
and you still have it 30, 40 years later, you got to call us and brag about it.
Yep.
Like a Def Leppard one, like the one with the big rig going through the triangle.
Yep, Into the Night, right. I don't even remember what the single was off that. But
was it Bring It on the Heartbreak? Or
it could
Bring
be,
It on
yeah.
the Heartache?
Heart? Yeah.
Oh, man, good stuff. All right, let's go to Mark. Mark, what do you want to brag about, Mark?
This is a kind of a historical one. It's from the 1987 Bears.
Yeah.
There was a strike that season.
Okay.
And so they had scab players playing the games.
Absolutely.
And before one game, a friend of my family's went to the – well, she didn't go to the game, but she knew this was going to happen, and she was very into labor and all that. And a lot of Bears players were out in front of the stadium signing these – and giving out these free posters, not real big, like 12 by 18, black and white, of them posing in a park where they had practiced, you know, just to stay in shape and waiting for the strike to end. So it's about 30 of them pose real casually and leaning on each other and panting, smoking a cigar.
Wow.
And they're in sweats and hoodies and baseball caps. And it's really
That's cool.
That is. How many players signed it?
It looks like she got a couple twice, like Fencek signed it twice. And Harbaugh, who was a rookie at that time.
Right.
And Sean Gale and guys like that. So
that's awesome.
Dozen, Wilbur Marshall, I think.
Yeah, if you're going to get the signatures, you want those 85, 86 Bears. So that's great. Yeah, if you could text a picture, that'd be great. But I think you're in the, you know, 400-plus range. Definitely start
really?
An auction there, yeah, and go from there. And, you know, see what happens, obviously, over a couple months. If nothing bites, you can lower your price then.
But, so where would I go to do this?
eBay.
You know, do that eBay, because you can roll that up, right? It's not, like, framed or anything.
Yeah, to, oh, sure.
Yeah,
I put it in real good shape. I put in a frame right away.
Yeah, and advice for shipping posters, try to put it in plastic of some kind, whether you have to put two jewel bags on each side or, you know, I buy the actual plastic tube stuff to put it back in because moisture mailing that, I've had some stuff damaged that way. And when you're talking $400 or plus, you know, you want to make sure you take the extra care with that.
I like that one, Mark. That's a good one.
Thanks
good job.
For calling.
Thanks
for calling, man. That's good. Yeah. I like the end. I like
the 85, 86 Bears. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200. We've got the 815 says, I got the Burger King Toy Story characters from the first Toy Story movie. What is that? Like the, like Happy Meal type stuff? But
yeah, Woody and stuff like that. The apparently, they have the first movie toys that they put out. And they're looking like 25 to 33 if they're still in the plastic.
All right, there you go. 312 also says the Parisian was a top-of-the-line Pontiac built and sold in Canada. The Pontiac Parisian.
That's interesting because, you know, that would explain maybe why the fridge, because obviously he was such a, you know, big international
maybe
you know, star.
I mean, it's obvious it's a,
maybe it was, that was more Canadian. Because I haven't seen the Pontiac. I've seen the original version of this poster, but not with the Pontiac promotion on it.
Interesting.
Yep.
Let's keep going here. Let's go, we got some, let's go to Lucy. Lucy, what do you want to brag about, Lucy?
I don't know if it's worth bragging about. I have a World War II footlocker.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's worth bragging about.
Yeah, where'd you get it?
How'd you get it?
My dad sent it home at the end of the war.
Okay.
Is that normal? I mean, doing swap meet, I've learned so much about war memorabilia that when the soldiers are done, like your dad, did he send a lot of stuff back that was like, here, you should hold on to this?
No, the only thing that came ahead of him was his footlocker. He was in the Navy, and the return address on it is San Francisco, and then, of course, it's addressed to my mother here in Michigan. But
wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, they go for 50 to 150, depending on condition. And we've talked about this a few weeks back with some of the items that, you know, soldiers brought back. It was much easier, you know, post-World War II to do that than, you know, post-wars after that. But, yeah, so you would hear that a lot. A lot of them would bring back flags or the other weapons, the enemy's weapons back home with them if they could, you know, so that, that
well,
was
he had
common.
A grass skirt in there that he picked up somewhere in the South Pacific
wow.
that he sent to me, but I can't, I don't know where that is.
Wow. That's great. No, but you got some decent. It's 50 to 150, you know, depending on condition.
Hold on to it.
Yep.
Thanks, Lucy.
Okay.
Thanks for
Thank
calling.
You.
That's a good brag. I like
yeah,
that.
It was.
Hold on to that one. Let's go with Joe. Joe, what do you want to brag about, Joe?
Hey, guys, you initially talked about heavy, bulky items. I've got an item that's smaller than a bread box, or about the same size, that weighs about 20, 30 pounds.
Wow.
It's not lead. It's an Underwood typewriter.
Okay.
I'm guessing it's between the 1920s and 30s.
Okay. Wow. Where'd you get it?
I thought I was going to be an author at one point in time.
Oh, okay.
Nice. So this is a classic Joe. How much did you write on this thing?
Oh, gee, probably about 2 pages.
Oh, wow.
But I said, I don't have what it takes.
Yeah. You did the 2 pages and you start procrastinating.
Tried.
I get it.
There you go.
Yeah, and I'm sorry.
You got me pegged.
Would that come with, would those 2 pages come with the typewriter?
I'd probably offer those separately.
There you go.
Because those are real keepsakes.
Yeah, they look like they're going about $45 to $60. Depending on the year, like a 1922 model went for $200.
Wow.
So uh-huh. Do you know what year was?
I was guessing between the 1920 and 1930 myself.
Oh, wow. Yeah, then you're probably closer to the 200, maybe more. Did it come with a case or any other accessories?
It may have, but I don't have any.
Cool.
See, here's what you can do, Joe. Is
sure.
You can just kind of, you know, embellish a little bit and be like author, novelist.
Take a picture of yourself in
yeah.
front of the typewriter,
right.
you know,
yeah.
so you have your...
With a little sweat on the brow, and
right.
you got the page in there, and it looks like you've been working really hard on it.
Do you recommend wire-rimmed glasses or a
Yeah, that's definitely, you're onto it. You nailed
yep.
it. Thanks,
okay.
Joe.
Thank you for calling.
Appreciate it. 312-981-7200. God, I love the car history we're getting tonight, Greg.
Okay.
312 says the Pontiac Parisian was. I hope I'm saying that right.
No
one
sounds
is
familiar.
Parisian, Parisian was a model that was sold in the U.S., taking the place of the flagship Bonneville. How dare they?
Wow.
The Bonneville.
That might explain a lot.
The Pontiac Bonneville. It's a classic. That's got my
yeah.
grandparents written all over it. They're big Pontiac. Or it's
yeah.
Pontiac. It was Buick.
Buick. Yeah, was
Buick and Pontiac. They seem to go back and forth.
Yeah, my family's big Buick family.
309 says, I've got a 1966 Batman utility belt.
Hmm.
Complete.
Wow.
Wait a second. Is this Batman?
It's taken off. Hold on. You might need that.
Crime's just kind of like, it's just overwhelming that Batman just texts into the swap meet now.
Right. If they could text in the brand on that, I'm going to assume it's Remco, but maybe text in the brand.
What do you mean? It's like a toy Batman
yeah,
belt?
Yeah, so it's like a toy belt. And back then, Remco was making everything.
What does something like that go for? Like,
It depends. Condition, of course. If it was loose, like played with and kind of dirty, scratched up, I think it still could be worth probably $40 to $60 minimum. And if he's got, you know, the accessories that were in the belt or the box that it came with, you know, then it goes up from there.
All right. Pretty cool. 312-981-7200. 815 says, I have 2 tickets from Elvis Presley's last show.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, what do you mean, like last show before he died?
Yeah, probably in Vegas.
Or last show. I mean, I don't know the. I know the circumstances of his death, but I don't know if he was like doing shows up to the point he died, or if he took time off.
I
don't know.
I would assume it would be a show in Vegas before he passed. I don't know offhand what that was, but I will look that up.
That's interesting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get like those kind of memorabilia pieces that are the last show of a famous musician who died.
Led Zeppelin, The Doors are are in that territory. Especially if they sold tickets for the tour and then they passed, and people would hold on them. They didn't even like redeem them to get their money back. They held on to them for as a keepsake.
Wow. 815's got another, and this is a good one too. Ready for this one?
Okay.
One sheet alien movie poster. So one sheet alien movie poster.
Yeah, the first
and
alien
one movie? Sheet Rosemary's Baby movie poster. Wow. Both from Belgium. Not messing around.
Right.
This isn't some American poster.
We're back to the France Star Wars poster. But we digress. A used ticket stub for the Elvis thing has gone for $125, like his last concert. Torn, they tear him in half.
Yeah.
So torn, $125. So if he's got the full stub, it could be worth more than that. Now, alien poster from
Alien and Rosemary's Baby, but we can stick with one of them. Both from Belgium. So okay, maybe alien's not green. Maybe he's like blue or something like that.
He's got the pink finger, not the blue finger. let's see.
I mean, what are posters for movies? Do they go
They
for
can.
A
like, I know a while back I was selling a Jaws poster, and they make so many different. You really have to study, all the fine print at the bottom because it's if you have the movie poster like the original Jaws, you could be in $400, $600 range for that.
Right.
And then they've made so many repros that they're $5. So you got to, use the magnifying glass on that. But with the Alien, it's not coming up here, but we'll work on that.
Our buddy Rick says that Elvis's last show is at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis.
Oh, wow. That's rings a bell now, yep.
There you go. All right, 312-981-7200. We are playing the swap meet tonight. Greg Flam's in the studio, and we will be right back. What we'll do is we'll get an update on the news with Rob, and then we'll continue the swap meet.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here we are.
That's right. It's a Swap Meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Part two, second half. We got some people on the line. We got some texts. We are evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. What do you want to brag about, Chicago? My favorite tonight. We got a winner. Robert, what do you want to brag about, Robert? I love this one.
My grandmother was a model in the 20s.
Wow.
And Al Capone liked her. And it was always frequent on the set. But I have a picture of my grandmother, Al Capone. My grandmother's wearing Al Capone's hat, which I still have.
Wow.
And he signed it to Lillian from Al.
Wow.
And then on the back he wrote a nice letter to her and signed his name, his full name.
Wow.
And it's in a picture frame. I've had it since I was, probably 18 years old.
That's amazing.
I'm not trying to sell it.
No, you're bragging about it.
Yeah, I couldn't even put a value on it.
No, I'm not bragging about it. It's just my grandma lived to be 101. I can brag about that.
You can brag about it.
You can.
This is a kick-ass swap meet, man. This is what it's like. I always make the joke that there's going to be people going to call in. They're going to say, hey, how much is this worth? But I'm always liking the ones that are like, hey, my family has this connection to Chicago history, or I've got Mayor Daley's old hat. And in your case, I got a picture with my grandma with Al Capone.
Signed,
that's great.
Too.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That is.
There you
so
go.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
That's,
and it was
that's
funny
great.
Because people see that picture and they go, who's the babe? And I'm like, that's my grandma.
Wow.
And they looked at my grandma at the time and she was like 96. And they go, and my grandma would always go, hey, I had the legs back then.
So she's got the brag, too.
Robert, thanks, man. That's great.
All right,
thank you.
Awesome. Good show.
Thank you, man. That's great. That's how you play it right there. Huh? All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Leah. Leah, what do you want to brag about, Leah?
Just to let you know, I have a $20 bill as redeemable in gold on demand at the United States Treasurer.
Wow.
Redeemable for gold.
In gold.
Oh, in gold.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, same idea.
Right? Looking that up, so.
A $20 bill that says it's redeemable in gold.
Mm-hmm. For gold, yeah. Yep. Let's see.
It's how does that up. Work? I don't even understand. I mean, you know what? I don't need to be schooled on it. I'm sure there's a...
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that works. I'm assuming it's you can take the bill and get, you know, the same amount in gold, $20 in gold back then. Now, obviously, that bill is looks like they're going for like $30 to $46, depending on condition, of course. Trying to see. One went as high as $1,000, it looks like.
Wow.
But that was a $500 bill, sorry. So not $20 bill.
Yeah, but at least you're getting, it seems like you double the value.
Yeah, but $20, yeah, you're in $30 to $50 range.
Right. All right, okay. Cool. Thanks, Leah.
All right, thank you.
Thanks
bye-bye.
For calling.
All right, 312-981-7200. Marty, what do you want to brag about, Marty?
I got to brag like Robert, okay?
All right, bring it.
Why are you laughing? I know you like when I call in.
Right, no.
Because you have so much enthusiasm.
Have you been doing this every Wednesday and I've been missing it?
Yeah,
or
you
what?
Have. We've done it for like a year and a half now. Yeah, you got to get with it.
I didn't think you were doing it anymore. Well, anyway, here's what I want to brag about, okay?
Okay, okay.
My brother still has this bank. It's a Howdy Doody ceramic bank. It's the 8-inch high one, and he's sitting on a pig, and it's about 60, honest to God now.
That is awesome.
And it's about 65 years old because he was 5 when he got it, and I'm the older sister, and I remember it, and it's just in the greatest shape.
Wow. That's a good one. I know. That's a good brag, yeah.
Isn't that great to brag about?
That is a good one, yeah. That's probably worth something.
Did I win the door prize? Did I win something off your desk or what?
You're pretty close, I say. I'm trying to
narrow it down. I have stale cheddar pretzels.
No.
No, I've got that.
I want food.
There's that. There's a couple of random napkins.
No. What do you think this is worth, guys?
Okay, first off, you're in the... A couple have sold recently, $75 to $100.
All right.
So there's
that's
that.
All, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
It depends on condition.
Be more.
Yeah,
I thought it'd be more too.
Yeah.
And where was it sold at? An auction or just
online? If you just eBay, I'm checking the sold price.
Yeah.
On eBay.
I just went on my computer. I had to find out the inches of the Howdy Doody.
Yeah. If you just put Howdy Doody pig ceramic bank.
Right.
You know,
there were a couple of them.
Yeah.
Okay. And one more thing. My mother would have been 102. March 5th of this past, you know, March.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And guess what? I have her furs that she used to wear when we went to, believe it or not, Lincoln Park Zoo
wow.
every Sunday.
Wow.
We never had a car, so we took the streetcar.
Wow.
And my dad and mom and me and my brother went, well, I have these furs. It's the one you wear around your neck, and the claws and the heads are on your chest.
Wow.
You know which ones I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I used to be afraid of them.
I would be too.
I'm afraid of them now.
Right.
I don't want to look at those. You know, I was, brother was 5, I was like 9.
Wow.
What do you think of them?
Yeah. What do furs go for?
That's way out of my wheelhouse.
I like
so
that.
I couldn't even tell you.
I don't think they're me.
Go to Ariana Furs. Is that still around?
Yeah, go to any fur place, antique place, I'm sure be able to tell you.
You mean like a vintage clothing store?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. They might be able to tell me, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or if you want to send me a picture through the Facebook page, I'll do some more research for you.
You will?
I will,
yep. Aren't you nice?
I try.
All
wonderful.
Right.
Well, you guys are great. I really
Thanks,
enjoy
buddy.
You.
Thanks. Every Wednesday,
right,
10 o'clock.
Talk to you, okay?
Talk
you.
Soon. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now. Marty, there you go. That was a good one.
Yep.
312-981-7200. 815 says they got a 1982 Playgirl issue with Bruce Jenner.
Oh, Bruce Jenner. I was
mint condition. You were thinking Steve Stone?
I was thinking Burt Reynolds.
Oh.
Yeah. But go ahead.
Found it when my grandma passed away. It was in her closet.
Wow.
1982 Playgirl with Bruce Jenner. Mint condition. I would think that'd be worth something.
Yep.
I don't
know
if it is.
Tell you in a second.
I feel like, what do I know? Every time I think something is worth something, it's like, that's $6.
Right, yeah, and then the junk is $2,000.
Yeah, right.
They're about 15 to 30, it looks like. Mint condition might be a little bit more, and I'm seeing if any have sold recently. Yeah, the one that sold recently took a best offer. They had $18, and they took lower than that as a you know, like
yeah,
a best
well,
offer.
I don't get it.
So,
all right.
But condition could bring it up.
773 says, I have 3 steel wheat pennies.
Mm-hmm.
from 1943, SD and Blank Mint. What is that?
Yeah, that's
a
winner.
I don't know what that even means. But.
Yeah, obviously that's like you know, the graded and the mint where it was made.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, those have gone upwards of $600.
Wow.
Yeah,
for some are wheat pennies.
Yeah, some are only 40, but I think the one he's describing was the higher end one. So you're looking 500
to
600. Yep.
There you go, bud. How much? 815 wants to know how much the metal premium 10 is worth. P.S. And no empty crackers inside. This is a premium saltine cracker
box. Yeah, if it's
box.
Just your basic like box, it's about $25.
Those are cool, though.
Yeah, and I have the Salerno ones that I've had in the past. But the ones that are higher are the Salerno trucks from back in, I want to say, 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever that was, when they were making those. The trucks are worth more than just the boxes.
Oh.
If you're looking for cracker tins.
If you're looking for cracker tins. Are people looking for cracker tins?
Yeah, they buy them still. I see them at estate sales every week.
Huh. I learned so much from the swap meet. I would think that's just cracker tin is where you put the junk that you don't want to look at anymore.
Yeah, I mean, but they're never that much. I mean, yeah, they're like $5. Yeah.
331 says, I have a 1967 Vietnam kimono. Never worn, perfect condition, handmade in Vietnam, brought back by my dad from the war.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Again, you were just saying, I mean, the idea of the soldiers bringing back stuff from war, that's a big part of collectibles, right?
Yep, it is. And that's why all that World War II stuff. And again, they were able to bring that stuff back, where now it's harder to do
that. Is it harder to do it? Like now, if you're in Afghanistan, is it harder to do?
Maybe someone
could
call in or text and let us know like what the protocols are. But I would think they are inspecting stuff more, you know, since Vietnam, you know. But pre that, I don't think they were inspecting it as, you know, harshly.
Interesting. How would you even – I don't even know what a price would go for that just because it's a kimono, right?
I don't know, and it's obviously – it's you know, it's, if it's mint condition and it's, you know, from back from the Vietnam War, it's going to be hard to put a number on that.
Vietnam is back in the consciousness. Good. Burns has got the big documentary coming up this fall.
Okay.
Ken Burns has got a whole documentary for the anniversary.
Yeah, you wrote a book. The book.
No, right? I did the book on – the Hue City book, which was crazy.
Yeah, that was.
But that's back. I saw something today. They did a preview, I think, on Channel 11 about it. And so they're Vietnam. It's going to be a Vietnam fall.
Yeah. Okay.
312-981-7200. I have a mint 8-track of Sgt. Pepper's.
Oh, there you
Beatles.
Go. Beatles. Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
I don't even really have to look that up. I know,
you know what it is.
I know 8-tracks. if it's still sealed, you're probably $125, $150 to start. You know, start an auction. Just start your auction $99 and see what happens.
Right.
But open, they still get $15, $20 if it's been played and out in the garage for 30-plus years. Yeah.
I feel like any 8-track I've ever seen is totally warped.
Yeah.
Like down to the I remember the 8-tracks when I was growing up, and 8-tracks were out, but you'd still have the 8-track machine. It was in the garage.
Right.
And you like put it in there and be like, this might work. Mint condition 8-track, that blows my mind.
Yeah, and what happens, obviously, is the label blisters from the moisture, first off.
Yeah, right.
But then the next thing you want to check for is underneath the tape, they have the felt tabs. And you want to make sure those are on there before you stick it in to test it in a machine, if you do have a machine. But there's, even if the tape is like broken off and it's wound inside, there are services on eBay. They'll do like $12 per tape to fix. And they're worth fixing, like some of the early Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Beatles. It'd be worth spending the $12 because you'll get $40, $50, $100 for the 8-track.
There you go.
So.
Greg Flam in studio at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the swap meet. I got Bruce, I got Judy, I got John, I got a ton of texts. Lots to get through, and we will do rapid fire when we come back here on The Download. Stay with us. It's Swap Meet here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Greg Flam, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. 630's got a great point. Marty called in, Marty's mother. She wore those furs that would wrap around that was almost the head biting the tail and to the zoo. That's what she said, right?
Wow.
She said we would go down to Lincoln Park Zoo. That takes a little stones, right? To be
it
like,
does.
Hey.
Be like,
and she'd think about jumping over this fence.
Right. Like kind of showing your receipt as you walk out of Walmart, you know, with the zoo.
Like, Exactly. I had this when I came in. All right, let's go to Bruce. Bruce, what do you want to brag about, Bruce?
Yes, my dad was in World War II, and he was a P-51 fighter pilot.
Okay.
And apparently his group shot up a German warship, and somehow, because, you know, they never really talked a whole lot in detail about the war, but somehow he was able to obtain the flag from that ship.
Wow.
So I've got a German flag, and it's about 4x6, and at the part where that it folds over the rope at the end, it's got some serial number on it, and it's in really great condition. It smells old, you know what old things smell like,
right?
Kind of musty, but it's in great condition.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay, can I ask? Can you describe a little bit more as far as I know?
What's the German flag? I mean, is that the Nazi?
Because I'm seeing different ones. That's why I got black and white ones. I got red, black and white. Yeah.
Okay, so it's primarily red.
Okay.
And then it's got the cross in the. The swastika is black with black outlining on it. And then the cross that goes through it is, you know, circled around the swastika. And that has a black stripe on the top and the sides, with outlined with a finer stripe. And then up in the corner is the Iron Cross, which is also outlined in the black fine striping.
That's war memorabilia, but you know, it's the symbolism is pretty negative, right? That's like, we kind of get into that weird thing where there's like, whenever Nazi memorabilia is kind of like,
right,
you don't really go put that online because that's
and they're pretty strict taboo about putting anything, obviously, with the
but
swastika.
I mean, this is not about the ethos or the philosophy of it. This is the actual flag from the ship.
Yeah, and yours sounds a lot better than some of these that have gone for like $260. I would think yours is more like a $400 to $500 to start auction and see what happens from there. But because it has this insignia on it that it does, it might not get through eBay's police.
Really interesting, Bruce. Well, that's a good one.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I thought it would be worth more than that. I also have a survival knife, which is a... made by Wilkinson Sword, and it's called the FS Fighting Knife, and that's what the pilots had on their by their shins, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it to a gun show,
right?
And they said that it was worth about $200, but he said because it has his name on it, it's personalized. They said it would be worth like double that, $500.
Right. I'm saying what you're saying, $200 to $400 is what I'm saying of those sold. I would try to go not so much to a gun show, but maybe a military, you know, show and see, and you might get an offer right there for it if you do want to sell it.
That's great.
I see.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. We're going to move on.
Thank you.
All right,
appreciate
you.
It. All right. Greg, Justin, 708 says, I have my father's Marine jacket from the Korean conflict.
Okay.
Does that have any value? That's an interesting one, the idea of Marine jackets from different wars, different eras.
Yeah.
Does that stuff show up?
Well, I'm going to get it to a price here. Looks like they're starting about 100, but they have gone upwards of 800.
Let's hope you don't dust that one off.
Yeah. I'm trying to find some other pricing. Right. But go ahead.
Let's keep going. All right, let's go to, we got a couple more. I've got a Yankees program from 1961. Is that what it was? 1961 Yankees program with Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris.
Hmm.
That's cool.
Yep.
That's the last of the, no, there's some more stuff, but we got to move on here.
Yeah. No.
847's got the winner of the night. I filmed a commercial with the Backstreet Boys. And I have their Millennium CD signed by all five.
Nice.
I just love the idea that this person filmed a commercial with the Backstreet Boys. How are you not calling in? You know, like, you know, text that in so I can go, I'll bite.
Maybe he's...
Right? You could do 25 minutes with that one.
He's lined up with other brag for other shows.
Yeah,
so
that's
he's bragging
the next,
about, right.
Yeah, we don't have enough
we
time
need an
tonight,
appointment,
but
right?
847, I would love for you to call in and explain that story. Let's get two calls in. We only got 2 minutes, so let's get Judy... Judy, what do you got? What do you want to brag about?
Hi.
Hi, Judy.
50 years ago, when we were brand new teachers at Leiden High School in Franklin Park, we had a birthday club. And the birthday girl got to pick the restaurant. I chose the Pinnacle Restaurant at the Holiday Inn on Lakeshore Drive.
Ooh, no big deal.
We were looking good, and pretty soon drinks came to our table from some gentlemen across the way, and they discovered it was my birthday. Mm. And shortly after that comes a hard roll with my likeness drawn on the hard roll, signed by Bill Mauldin, the World War II cartoonist.
Wow. Wait, so like a hard roll, like, are you talking like a dinner roll? Like a
dinner roll.
So he drew your face on a piece of bread?
Yeah, he did.
That's
I
awesome.
Still have it. I put it in a baggie.
This is his move?
And a cup. It's in my drawer. I've looked at it regularly. It's never changed. I didn't do a thing to it. I thought, I don't know how to preserve it.
I wouldn't either. It's hard as a rock right now. But I got to say, I love that that Bill Mauldin's move is, let me draw you on this dinner roll.
Yeah,
it's right. Yeah,
he's a very smooth cartoonist.
Mm-hmm.
That drinks were flowing.
That's amazing. I don't know how you would do it. I just think that's a brag. That's a brag.
I was just looking up art just by Bill Mauldin to see what his art's going for, and can't even find like authentic. I see some books and some other things for in the $20 range, but I know that can't be right for an actual piece. So
yes,
it's a great brag, and it's the kind of stuff we look for.
There you go. All right, thank you so much, Judy. Appreciate it.
Okay, great memory. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. 630 says it's probably Steve Cochran who texted in, filmed the commercial with the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. Funny.
All right, that's going to do it tonight. Greg Flam, at Two Page Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. Can't thank you enough.
Every
Wednesday, it's great radio here with Swap Meet. See you next Wednesday.
Always fun. Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it tonight. Back tomorrow night with Inglewood activist Hal Baskin sitting down at the big table. Got a tremendous story where they gave him a honorary street sign. And then somebody said, you know, he used to be in a gang when he was a kid. And then overnight, Streets and Sand just took the street sign down without even telling him. That's a classic Chicago politics story from back in the day.
But isn't that what you want to promote? A guy
and he wasn't hiding it. He wasn't hiding it. It wasn't like, you know, someone did an investigative piece. That was part of his story. It was just that somebody reached out to the alderman's office or something, said, wait a second. And then without any, like they already did the ceremony and everything, just like quietly tried to take it down. You're like, wow.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so we'll talk with Hal tomorrow on the program. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Patty Vasquez up next here with Pretty Late.